You are listening to Rule of Law on ruleoflawradio.com. I'm Deborah Stevens, here with Randy Kelton. We are back on the air on our own radio station, ruleoflawradio.com.
Yes, we are. We are on Deborah's radio station because she created it.
Well,
I supervised. I made executive decisions. I sat back and I said, handle it. Mm-hmm. And she did.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That means I'm a good executive.
That means he does whatever I say. So tonight we are back on the air for the first time in about a month since WTPRN went off the air. Just want to thank everyone at WTPRN for everything that they did. Danny Romero, Wes Perkins, and everyone else at WTPRN for putting us on the air and for giving us all they gave us that whole time. We're very grateful. And now we are back on the air ourselves.
Yes, back up, and this time we're staying up. And we're going to cover this really exciting election today.
Incredibly exciting election. Now, Randy, I just checked in. Okay, so here's what's going on so far. Election results are starting to come in, and it looks like Obama so far has 81 Electoral College votes. McCain has 39. Results from the East Coast. Wow, even Oklahoma is in already. Amazing. And did you vote today, Randy?
No, I didn't. I'm registered in Wise County, and I couldn't get up there.
Oh. Well, you have to change your voter registration.
Yes, I will.
And I voted today. And guess who I voted for?
Did you write Ron Paul's name on the screen with a Sharpie?
I didn't have to, thank God. I just wrote him in as a write-in. Now, even though Ron Paul was not certified, registered as a write-in candidate here in Texas, well, honestly, Obama and McCain weren't legitimate candidates in Texas either. So I figured I'm just going to vote wherever I want to. And I didn't spend the last year promoting Ron Paul and writing songs about him and doing everything else to not vote for him today. So I voted for Ron Paul. I voted for Raymond Frank. And we'll see how he does, how Raymond Frank does in the race. That's one of the main races that I'm interested in seeing.
Me too.
And we also have Vicky Karp and Karen Rennick from Vote Rescue are going to be calling in later this evening, sometime between 8 and 9 p.m. Central Time, and they're going to be cluing us in as to what happened today with their poll watching. They set up trouble reporting centers for people to report, like any errors on the machines, like if they punched in Obama and McCain happened to come up or anything like crazy like that, or long lines or being disenfranchised or people giving them a hard time about ID or anything else. So they'll be calling in a little bit later. And callers, if you'd like to call in, it's area code 512-646-1984. Same call number as was for WTPRN. And there's also a listen line as well, 512-485-9010.
Yeah. Oh, me?
You. You're
yes.
Up.
Yes, well, we were going to have a lively discussion about the election, but I think we've just finished it. That's about as lively as it's going to get.
Is that as lively as it's going to get? Randy, why don't you go over some of the stories about when when you went to file criminal charges against earlier, we have two sets of criminal charges. I still didn't get a chance to file mine yet because there was so much stuff going on this last month and a half and trying to get back on the air for our listeners and everything. I still have my criminal charges against the previous two Secretary of States that will be filed, and Randy filed against the current Secretary of State for certifying the candidates, McCain and Obama, when their respective party chairs had not certified their candidates for their respective parties in time for the deadline. So the Secretary of State here is at fault. I've heard a lot of discussion about this whole McCain and Obama not being qualified to be on the ballot here in Texas, and that's true, but McCain and Obama didn't do anything wrong, and neither did the political parties And honestly, neither did the state party chairs. You know, the state party chairs just didn't get the certification in time for obvious reasons, because their respective conventions were not held in time for the state party chairs to be able to certify them in time. The person who committed the crime is the Secretary of State for going ahead and certifying on the ballot when they're not proper certifiable candidates. So, Randy, you went down and tried to do something about it. It didn't work out too well.
But it had a predictable result. They threw me out in the street like I was some common criminal. And I really wanted to go after the judge, but I was sent to that judge by an attorney who's actually a real attorney, and he was a personal friend of the judge. So he messed up everything. If I went after the judge, it'd be because of his friend, and I didn't think that was appropriate. And it wouldn't have made much difference anyway at the time. We may go back after him later, huh? Now, that's only, I've been thrown out of two or three courts since then. We've had a good time getting me thrown out of courts.
You've been thrown out of two or three courts since then?
Yes. Two, and encouraged to leave by the marshals for the third, because I was giving the judge a bit of a hard time.
Okay, what did you do?
Okay, interesting things. I went to a hearing on a misdemeanor with a friend of mine, and he went, this was the first appearance, and he came into the court, and they continued the case and transferred it to another judge, and I got a copy of the continuance and asked the clerk about it, and she said, well, he doesn't have an attorney, so he has to come back until he gets an attorney. I said, say what? Oh, yeah, the attorney, the prosecutor can't talk to the accused unless they have an attorney. Well, that's interesting. I wonder where you came up with that rule. And I give him a hard time and finally got in front of the judge and told the judge that I was researching corruption in the criminal justice system, and the reason I was here was this continuance. First, I don't see how you were authorized to bring the person here in the first place, or how you were authorized to do anything but dismiss the case in the second place. You ordered him to be here under dire threat of serious consequences. You didn't go to him and say, hey, would this be a nice time for you to show up? Would it be convenient for you? You just picked a time that was convenient for yourself and ordered him to be here. Now the court has a duty to be prepared to try or hold the hearing that he's here for. He said, well, Mr. Kelton, this is how we do things here. It's in the court rules that if the person doesn't have an attorney, we have to have them come back until they get an attorney. I said, well, that's very interesting, and yes, I saw that in your rules. However, 28.01 Code of Criminal Procedure, which authorizes you to summon a person to court, doesn't say anything about summoning them to court to see if they have an attorney. It does say something about summoning them to court for an arraignment. And there's about eight or nine things in there that they can be summoned to court for, and this is not one of them. He said, well, Mr. Kelton, this is how we do it here. I said, well, if you look at that writ of habeas corpus you just refused to see and read it, you'll find out why I find this most interesting. Every step from arrest to trial is presently practiced in Texas. It's not only wrong, it's very specifically against particular law. And up to this point, I've been able to implicate everyone from the policeman on the street to the prosecuting attorney. This is the first time I get a shot at the trial court. He said, oh, you do? Yes, I do. Now I have the trial court punishing the individual by forcing them to come down to one of your little hearings where you are order them to be here at 9 o'clock, and here it is 11 o'clock before you tell him, oh, by the way, You didn't have to waste a whole day of your life and come sit down here in my courtroom. We're not going to do anything. You get to go away and come back and do it again. So, Judge, are you going to pay him for his time? I'm not going to pay him for his time. But somebody needs to pay him for his time. Well, I'm not going to pay. So that was interesting because after that, a few days later, I got three tickets. All bogus tickets. I got a no expired safety sticker the day it went out. Under law, you got a 5-day grace. I got a ticket for no registration. I had it, I just never got the sticker on the window. And my proof of insurance, the card I had was an old one. So he wrote me for all three. Well, just for yucks, I prepared three criminal charges against him for writing the tickets, because the way they write the tickets here in most jurisdictions in Texas, not all, but most, require you to be in court on or before a certain date. And if you read 543.006 Texas Transportation Code, it states that the citation must state a date to appear at least 10 days after the date of arrest. The citation must state a date to appear before a magistrate. So normally I went down there as soon as I got the tickets, but I had too much to do and it took too long. By the time I got around to going down there, it was been several days. So I just waited till the date on the citation that told me to be there on or before the 30th, which was a month down the road. Well, 5006 paragraph B commands that the citation state a date to appear before a magistrate. So I went to the clerk and said, I want to appear before a magistrate. And she said, why, sure. And she looked up my tickets, gave me this little piece of paper, and I went in and I gave it to the judge. I gave it to the clerk. The judge called me up. Well, the problem he had is he thought he was a judge, a municipal court judge. But he wasn't a municipal court judge. When I stepped up in front of him under process, or under summons, I stepped up before a magistrate. And since he was a magistrate, I just handed him the three criminal complaints. Well, he didn't take that well. Tried to give them back to me, and I didn't want to take them. And he got pretty ugly and told me to sit right there and turn to the clerk and told the clerk, get me a marshal in here. So I figured, well, I'm going bye-bye. But I didn't. He called somebody else up and took care of him. And when he got done with this, somebody else called me back up and said, Mr. Kelton, I can't take these. You'll have to give these complaints to the clerk. And I assured him that the clerk would be very reluctant to take my complaints, as normally a criminal complaint is given to the clerk by some magistrate, which you are. Well, he wasn't impressed by that. He refused to take the complaints. He asked me if I had any other business. I said, yeah, Judge, I got these three tickets. I need a court date. And he said, well, how do you want to handle them? I want a jury trial, of course. That's because I'll force the judge at the jury trial to dismiss them all by directed verdict, because I have affirmative defense to all three. I'll make them give me a jury trial just so they have to pay a jury, and I get to sit in front of the jury and joke with them and tell them how rotten and low down the criminal justice system is, and just have a great time. Well, when they gave me the court date, I told them to the marshal, and I said, Mr. Marshal, I'm going to need you outside, and you need to get me another marshal. I went outside, and he came out with me, and he said, what can I do for you? Go in and arrest that judge. What can arrest the judge? And we went through it. He does the chicken dance, and I do this little routine where I tell him, sure you can, just go in there and throw the cuffs on him and drag him right off to jail. You don't have far to go. Jail's right in the basement.
Yeah, Randy, I remember you said before that I remember you said before that the judge isn't the problem, it's the bailiff that's the real problem. Because the bailiff won't arrest the judge when it's time for him to do the arresting.
Exactly. We all think the judge is the problem. The bailiff does not work for the judge. It is the bailiff's duty to keep the peace in the court. And it makes no difference who breaches the peace. And in this case, it was the judge who breached the peace by an act of Class A misdemeanor, act of official oppression. So, I tried to get him to arrest him. He wouldn't do it. I tried to get him to take his chicken suit off. He didn't do that either. So, I came back just the other day, the day of the hearing, and they canceled the hearing.
Imagine that.
But this goes to the point. When I went before that judge with no attorney, that municipal court judge didn't tell me that I had to go home and come back when I had an attorney. But the county court judge, that's what he did. So
somebody's getting special privileges, apparently.
Yeah. How is it that I can talk to a prosecutor with a Class C misdemeanor, but Don can't talk to one with a Class B misdemeanor? The same set of rules govern both, so what's the deal here? Well, this is what gives me a shot at the courts, and also get a good shot at these officials. I filed a counter-complaint in the criminal action. And we have a caller, so I'll take the caller before I go into the details on that.
Yes, we have a caller, Dan from Texas. And also, there was a couple of other callers on the board that were unscreened that I was trying to screen in the other room, and somebody ended up getting dropped off. So, callers, please call back in. And we will definitely take your calls. So right now we're going to go to Dan in Texas. Dan, can you hear us?
Yes. And welcome back. I was
Thank you.
To go into withdrawal. I mean, I'm still a little twitchy, but well, welcome back.
Thank you. So what's on your mind tonight, Dan? You have any comments about the election fraud? I hear a beeping going on your end.
Yeah, that's my terminal. And let me just fix that.
Got it?
Got it.
Okay, so what's on your mind tonight? You have any comments on the election fraud situation or anything else?
I've just been, foaming at the mouth at people when they ask me, did you vote? And I said, no. And they're like, why not? And I said, well, I can't in good conscience vote for anybody. I've been telling them that your options this year are down to which flavor of more of the same do you think you'll be able to choke down? And they just looked at me as if I fell from the sky or something. And then I launch into my whole spiel about how the two major party candidates are being funded by the same big money interests who have funded every election since 1960. And they look at me, and I say, well, if the boys that have an interest in maintaining the status quo are still shoveling cash into the coffers of these candidates, what do you infer from that? I inferred that they're not expecting too much rocking of the boat. And aside from that, if you have the same advisors whispering in somebody's ear that have been whispering in their ear for the last 30 years, like, say, Zbigniew Brzezinski, what kind of change in policy do you expect to see? And people are, like, looking at me, and I said, no, seriously, Google it for yourself. And they don't like that. Apparently, they think I have a bit of a thinking problem.
Yeah, because you have the gall to do it.
Because you have the gall to try to think.
Anyway,
Well, I voted for Ron Paul, and the reason that I did that is because, well, going back from the beginning, me supporting Ron Paul and other third-party candidates in general, I get this common question of, well, you're just throwing away your vote. You should vote for somebody that you think is going to win. And here's what I always tell people. This is an election. This isn't a gambling pool at the office. You don't vote for who you think is most likely going to win so that you can feel like you are on the winning team. You vote for who is the person that you really want to see in office according to the best of your conscience. You know, our forefathers died for us to have the right to vote. My great-grandmother was in the suffragette movement. You know, it is an honor for me to be able to say that I went down there and I voted for Ron Paul in the 2008 election. Okay? Not knowing that he wouldn't win, but it doesn't matter because that's who I voted for in good conscience. It's not a gambling pool. It's not a bet.
Right.
But she didn't take her Sharpie and write Ron Paul on the screen.
No, of course not. That was a joke. I knew I wouldn't need to anyway. In fact, I heard a lot of precincts that if you did write-ins, especially in early voting, that you actually got a paper ballot. Now, I had to do like the scroll wheel thing on mine, but it was there.
All right. Well, I guess I will buzz on off and listen to the rest of the show on my handy dandy little airwave interception device that goes into the dash of my car.
Cool.
Now this one's legal. This one's legal.
Good. Good.
Excellent.
Anyway, it's good to hear you guys back on the air and give them hell.
I still need your narrative.
Hmm?
I still need that narrative.
Well, I'll send you an email later on. I pulled into Michael Bednarik's show a couple weeks back and started quoting the patent speech. I've since rewritten the patent speech for 2008. I'll email it to you.
Okay,
great. Thank you, Dan.
All right.
Thank you, Dan.
Bye. All right, good luck. Bye.
All right, we are going to go to break now, folks. Let you guys listen to some really sweet reggae music. I'm running all the breaks myself now. So please call on in, 512-646-1984. We'll be right back.
Da 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 da
All right, we are back. Rule of Law Radio. Playing some sweet reggae dub for you. I have a vast collection. I was thinking earlier today, boy, I could be a DJ, man. I've got thousands and thousands and thousands of songs. Okay, we are now going to go to our next caller, Robert in Arizona. Hey, Robert, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, I just wanted to welcome you both back. And
thank you.
I'm in the forum over there, so Randy, if you want to communicate with me about a couple of things you wanted to discuss, we could do that in the forum if you like, or by email or phone, either way.
Okay, I'll look at the forum.
And you're the administrator over there?
I am.
Oh, okay.
I'm the chump.
You're the chump. Okay, I'll leave a message for the chump then.
He does have a username.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think it's Randy or Randy, yeah. Kelton or something. Yeah,
or something.
Yeah, I don't remember what it is. I didn't set it up. You set up your own username, dude. What?
Yeah, I think I'm gonna change it to the Law Chump.
The Law Chump. Mine is Dub Siren, but I'm also the administrator, so.
Yeah. I kind of look forward to listening to what Vicki and Karen have to say.
Me too.
You said you're going to have them on a little later?
They're going to be calling in. They're out on location right now. They've been running, these centers called trouble reporting centers at the polls, where people can go and report any difficulty they had voting or any kind of trouble or any kind of weird thing, anything amiss or out of the ordinary. And so I went to my trouble reporting center and said, yes, I noticed something out of the ordinary. And I said, what? They're using electronic voting machines.
There are no paper ballots.
There are no paper ballots. What's going on here? There's trouble.
We had some Diebold machines at my polling place here in Arizona where you had to block out certain spots on a piece of paper and then run it into the machine. And, you know, it's about as trustworthy as Richard Nixon, in my opinion.
Well, absolutely.
They already know that the Diebold machine has switches and software programmed into it so that you can reverse the vote of selected minorities.
Yes. It's incredible.
I'm more worried about the tabulators at the county and state level here in Arizona. They will not reveal what the software is like behind those functions, and I'm sure they're possibly corrupted.
Right.
But I went ahead and protest voted. I went in and I voted. I remember Ron Paul endorsing the Constitution Party candidate, and I was hoping to vote for him, but it wasn't on the ballot. And I knew it wouldn't get counted if I just wrote it on there.
So well, now, wait a minute. The Constitution Party candidate was registered as a write-in candidate. Oh, you're in Arizona. Okay.
In Arizona.
Okay. Yeah.
And so the other person I had a lot of respect for, even though I don't completely agree with all her politics, was Cynthia McKinney, just for the simple fact that she was the only congressperson who ever confronted Don Rumsfeld and his gang of jackals about the missing money at the Pentagon and issues involving the 9/11 masks and, you know, the airplanes and the evidence and all the other things. She was the only person that had a backbone and stood up and asked some real hard, biting questions.
True. Like, and what happened to the $2.3 missing trillion dollars from the Pentagon?
I believe it started out at 2.2 or 2.4. But last I heard, it was like 3.6 that they can no longer track. So it just gets more and more out of hand every day, plus what Wall Street's been stealing in order to gobble up what's left of the assets that are liquid in America. So, you know, we've got a few problems to resolve here. We need to keep working. I'm looking forward to what you're doing here, and I hope we can get more work done on the forum, get some documents cobbled together that we can adapt and use in our various states. I've got a little problem coming up with a zoning person, and I'm looking forward to getting some ammunition on how to do that. But that can wait. It didn't have to be tonight.
I had someone call from Alabama. Amy called from Alabama. and was talking about an attorney who sent her trying to collect a bill that she didn't owe, and is making all kind of threats against her. And she was just thrilled that she got to kick this attorney's behind, and all his dire threats meant nothing. Because after doing this and after getting this different perspective, she realized that they can say what they want to, there's always something we can do to fight them. And that's that's why I'm on this show. That was the best endorsement I could have.
It's
not the particular piece of information, but the fact that whatever they do, there's something we can do to fight them, and we need to fight them, especially zoning. Those guys are such chump.
Well, and they recently passed, the county commissioners here recently passed a rule about how many vehicles you can have in your on your property. And, for example, I've got two neighbors, one on either side of me, and they're pretty cool. But somebody across the street who can't even see in my backyard, I'm convinced, turned in a complaint against me just on a grudge. Because years ago I caught one of their kids stealing something out of one of my work trucks. And there's been a grudge there ever since. I bought a couple more vehicles recently, and they saw them parked. They're operable vehicles. They're not wrecked. But I got this complaint that was stuck on my door by the neighbor who photocopied something out of a website from the county. And a couple weeks later, I get a letter in the mail from one of the people at the county who's some sort of technician having to do with, you know, keeping up the looks of, around the county. Their excuse is to beautify the county by limiting the number of vehicles you can own and on your property, and if you have more than an acre, you can have more, but if you have less than an acre, you can only have one or maybe two.
No,
it's ridiculous.
Robert, let me ask you this. Are you in an annexed municipality?
No, I'm in living in the open county.
Well, then would this be a state law, or are these deed restrictions that you're talking about, or what?
No, this is just a rule that the county commissioners passed, and it's not tied into the deed on my property.
So it's like a county-wide ordinance then, kind of.
It is, and I live out in a very remote area that I moved into 20 years ago, and I have a neighbor on either side of me, and then I have acres of untouched land behind me. I don't own the land, but there's nothing there, and there's no view into my rear of my property from that other land, which is untouched. And so what I have doesn't even really, when you get right down to it, it doesn't even count. But I'm going to do a few things. I'm going to do a little bit of cleanup and whatnot, and then I'm going to call the guy up and see what he wants.
Well, let me make you a suggestion.
I would buy as many junk cars as possible and put it right on the roadside.
I was at an auction once, and they had two 40-foot transport buses nobody would bid on.
Yeah.
So I bid $700 and got them both.
Uh-oh.
One of them runs great, and the other one doesn't. And I had it parked next to my house I bought the lot next to me and tore two buildings down off of it and have this big empty lot.
Yeah.
And I had this bus out there using it for a shop.
Sure.
Well, I got this threat note from the city that I couldn't have that bus out there. So the first thing I did is went and read the ordinances.
Yeah.
And I told the mayor that I needed to know what all of the permitting requirements are for a bus terminal. He said, what? I said, I read the ordinances, and you guys changed the zoning on my property, and you did not properly post it so that I could raise an objection. Now you have me zoned commercial, and the way I read the zoning ordinances, I can have a bus terminal. He said, Mr. Kelton, you better not. Said, oh, yeah. All these people going to Fort Worth and back, they need a bus. And so I've got a couple guys driving buses back and forth, and we're going to set up a terminal here.
Oh, my God.
Well, I was just jerking him around. But what I did do was take a tarp and put over that bus.
Yeah.
And the mayor asked me about a week later, Mr. Cummins, you going to get rid of that bus? I said, what bus? He pointed and said, that bus. Oh, you mean that white tarp? Read your ordinances, Bubba.
Well, see, I have never...
If you can't see it, it ain't there. Well, it can't be unsightly. So,
I have never heard of county commissioners or county commissioners' courts making rulings or voting to pass county-wide ordinances of how people need to have their properties look or maintained or how many cars. I mean, that's usually something that you find within an annexed municipality or deed restrictions on property. I would fight this. I would fight this if I were you, Robert. This is ridiculous. County commissioners have no business trying to pull crap like this.
I got to pick my battles carefully right now. I've got a kid in college and a wife in college, and I'm working 6 and 7 days a week as it is.
Yeah, I agree.
So I have to look at what...
Get you a tarp and put over them.
That's what I'm going to do first off. So I'm going to put a tarp over a couple of the vehicles that aren't currently being used but are operable.
And suggestion on the tarp. Check sign companies.
Yeah.
The sign companies that do the signs for billboards.
Sure.
They're all tarps now. And they've got these huge printers. And when they pull one down, like in Dallas, we had Clear Channel, or in Grand Prairie between Dallas and Fort Worth, and you go down there and get them for $6 a piece. They used to give them away for free.
Well,
last time, these things were 40 feet long and 14 feet wide.
That's fantastic.
I covered that whole bus with two of them.
I could even tack those up to the inside of my wood picket fence all the way around, so there's no way
in. And this stuff, it's very durable.
I'll bet.
So, but you know, if you buy a I had a friend that had six cars under tarps. Nobody complained about them.
Sure.
You could look at the tarps and tell that one of them was a Maserati, two of them were Corvettes. And one turned out to be a Ferrari, and another looked like a Matchbox, and it was a Lotus with a serial number of 245.
This is not exactly junk.
So, you can keep those kinds of, you can keep vehicles there, but so long as you put a tarp over them.
Well, what they're trying to claim is if you've got a vehicle that's operable, I have read part of the statute already, the operable vehicles don't count. And it's the opinion of the neighbor across the street that what I have are non-operable vehicles, and they tried to snare me under a junkyard ruling. And so what I have to do is just do a little bit of nominal cleanup, which needs to be done every couple of, you know, every 6 months or a year. You got to, you know, have a yard sale, get rid of a few things. And that's all I'm going to do. I'm going to clean everything up real good, then I'm going to call the guy back up and say, I don't have a problem, you know, take me off your dirt list. And at that point, and I do want to structure a good letter for him at that point, it makes it clear that I don't comply or I don't conform to the definition of his original complaint and leave it kind of in his lap.
Yeah, I agree with you that you have to pick your fights real quick.
Have to pick your battles.
Yeah, I like to fight with them, but I just do that just to annoy them.
Well, I'm more interested in staying active in other things, like helping small webcasters stay on the air and other things like that.
Well, we can certainly identify with that.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And anybody who wants to help us stay on the air, we need help, so please give us a donation if you can. Any little bit helps, because I've had to take a lot of time off of work lately to set this up. You know, setting up to broadcast is extreme. I mean, it's just a heck of a lot of work, really.
And my beer fund is a shambles.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. By the way, when WTPRN fell down, what was the disposition of this attorney who has the jurisdictionary show? I think he was on the air once or twice.
Dr. Graves. We're looking to bring him back up.
Yes.
That would be wonderful if we could get him back up, get you up, and
we're going to bring Mike Bider and Tony Davis, and we have a bunch of others that we're going to try to bring back.
That would be wonderful. Okay.
All right. Thank you, Robert.
Thank you both.
Okay. Good night. Okay, so, callers, if you'd like to call in, please, area code 512-646-1984. Right now, we're going to go to another break. All right, and Vicki and Karen from Vote Rescue will be calling in during the next hour. We're going to be reporting more on the election. And speaking of the election, hope you guys enjoy this song by the Wailing Souls. It's called Bandits Are Taking Over the Town.
Sheriff is under arrest.
right, we are back. The rule of law. The bandits are taking over the town. They've got the voting machines. They pre-programmed the election. And just, I just wanted to dispel any myths about so-called paper trails to anyone who may not have heard any of this yet, because we were talking to someone today who was mentioning about paper trails, and this is a complete and total utter fraud. Okay? The paper trails is a complete and utter fraud. See, what happens is, with the paper trails, the machines still do all the counting, okay? And they attach this cute little printer to the machines to make it look like, oh, there's a piece of paper. We're actually voting on paper. And then the paper goes in a box. You verify the paper to make sure that it's really what you voted. But guess what, people? That piece of paper never gets counted. The machines still do all the counting, and the only reason they have the piece of paper is in case the election is contested. And in that case, they only recount 4% of the pieces of paper, and whoever's in the executive branch gets to decide which precincts of the four, which 4% of the total precincts actually go into the final count. Okay, so it's a complete and utter fraud. I don't believe in recounts anyway. I say you count it right the first time. Okay, you have paper ballots, hand counted in public view. I want to go there to the election polls, and I want to sit there and watch as everybody puts their ballot in. Nobody touches the box, and then at the end of the day, I'm going to be there when the box gets open. I want to watch them take out the ballots one by one, look at them myself along with the election officials, and make sure that the election counters put the tick mark in the right column, all of it under videotape. And then the results are posted on the precinct door, and then they get and then those precinct by precinct results get reported to the county. None of this crapola of the sheriff coming and to all the precincts and gathering up the boxes and bringing them to the convention center, and they have to open them up and make sure everything's okay. No. It has to be hand counted in public view at the precinct level. That's the only way it's going to work, with the results posted. So that's my take on paper trails. Okay. So, Randy, what do you have to say about that?
Well, as it is, we're so far away from a real vote that I don't see how we're going to get back to one anytime soon. When you were talking earlier about making sure that the electronic voting machines worked right.
Yeah, give me a break.
I think if they counted the votes accurately, they wouldn't be working right by design.
I think that they shouldn't use voting machines at all. Should not give any voting machine, should not have any voting machines at all, period. No voting machines. There's no way to make sure that it's accurately count, that they're counting accurately. There is no way to make sure of that. In fact, some states, the Constitution says the counting has to be done in public view. Now, how is it going to be done in public when it's done inside a piece of software, inside a computer? In fact, I heard this is in North Carolina, I believe. They set the voting machine down, the tabulation machine, in the middle of the floor for everyone to look at, and said, see, the counting things done in public. Oh God, give me a break. There's no way to make sure that it counts right. The only way to make sure that the counting is done right is to count the pieces of paper, period.
I agree.
Callers, call in 512-646-1984.
Before we went to break, the first time I was talking about a little foray in the municipal court. And when I went to the court and the judge wouldn't take my criminal complaints, I filed some other documents. Well, actually, the last time I went, I filed some documents. A motion to disqualify the arresting officer as a credible witness, a challenge to the jurisdiction, motion for bona fides, and all the little annoying motions that I could think of. And I also filed a counter-complaint in the criminal action. This is something that we've discovered we can do recently. It seems under Luckenbach v. Thelke, the courts held that when the state initiates an action, it waives all sovereign immunity from counter, cross, or intervener. or any other action that can be taken in a civil nature. Normally, you can't sue the state itself because the state is sovereign. And you can only sue the state if the state grants you permission. And the only time the state will grant you permission is to sue for injunctive relief, to order it to do something different or to do something it's not doing. Not for monetary relief. However, when the state picks the fight, the gloves come off. So I filed a counter-complaint in the criminal action, and it was based on a document I wrote for Jerry Stevens, Deborah's husband, where an attorney had sent him an admonishment which advised him of his rights and of all the bad things that would happen to him if he didn't do what he was supposed to do. And the judge in that case, we had filed a motion to disqualify, and she didn't disqualify herself, or she didn't act on the motion the way she's required to by law. So I sent her an admonishment and told her how, if you continue on this path, you'll act without jurisdiction. And being without jurisdiction, you will be subject to civil tort under numerous causes of action. And I went through the book I have on causes of action and pulled out a bunch that were appropriate and warned her that these things could happen to her. Well, when I got the tickets in Austin, I pulled out this motion and converted it from a counter-complaint. And this is kind of how it goes. Inasmuch as the court is a creature of statute and is not operating under the common law, and inasmuch as affiant, having refused to voluntarily contract with the court by way of his challenge to the jurisdiction, and inasmuch as the court failed to demonstrate an offer and acceptance, mutual assent, execution and delivery of the contract with the intent that it be mutual and binding, or consideration mutually of obligation supporting the contract, the court thereby acted to enforce a unilateral contract which furnishes no consideration of value to the other party and does not obligate itself to do anything that may result in harm to itself or benefit to the other party. Therefore, subject to the actions of the court consequent to the above, affiant is harmed as follows. False imprisonment. The defendant was willfully detained by the plaintiff. What I'm reading here are elements of the cause of action of false imprisonment right out of the book. The detention was without plaintiff's consent. The detention was without legal authority or justification. The arresting officer, without regard to whether or not the original Terry stop was legal or not after arrest, was bound to issue a proper citation in accordance with the law and failed to do so, rendering the officer a trespasser ab initio, wherein all acts of the officer were defeated. Cause of action 2, abuse of process. Even had the original summons been valid, consider the following. A plaintiff was served with a valid process. Oops. Turn page. The defendant made an illegal, improper, or perverted use of the process after it was issued. The defendant had an ulterior motive for or purpose in using the process, and the plaintiff suffered injury as a result. Affiant properly challenged the authority of the court to proceed with authority, bound the court to prove jurisdiction. Failing to do so left the court with no statutory authority to compel affiant. Subsequently, affiant was forced to protect himself by preparing documents, by taking off work, by enduring hours of carefully prescribed behavior under the watchful eye of a bailiff armed with a loaded pistol, and who affiant had every reason to believe would use that loaded weapon to enforce strict compliance with any whim of the court. By the above, affiant was harmed. Threat of bodily injury. The defendant acted intentionally or knowingly. the defendant threatened the plaintiff with an imminent bodily injury, and the defendant's threat caused injury to plaintiff. Defendant, while committing the crime of false imprisonment against affiant, was prominently displaying a deadly weapon as a demonstration of implied force, which has the effect of seizure under the Fourth Amendment. Affiant was thereby forced to act in consequence to demands of defendant and was subjected to monetary loss and emotional distress. Four, fiduciary duty. The plaintiff and the defendant had a fiduciary relationship. The plaintiff was the sovereign. The defendant was the police officer who collected money for his services. The defendant breached its fiduciary duty to plaintiff. The defendant's breach resulted in injury to the plaintiff or benefit to the defendant. In this case, injury to the plaintiff in that I was denied due process, and according to the court, a denial of due process is an injury on its face as a matter of law, and benefit to the defendant because he made his ticket quota. The court is bound itself in contract to affiant by its oath of office and acceptance of remuneration subject to said contract. The court has then violated laws prescribing tenets of said contract to the defendant to the detriment of affiant. Okay. And we have a caller?
We have a caller.
Yeah.
We've got Chris from Chris from Oklahoma. Oh, we just dropped off.
You mean Chris the chump from Oklahoma?
Chris, please call back in if you can. Okay, continue on.
Okay. Chris is just a really nice guy, and he didn't want to interrupt my reading of this counter-complaint that I wrote just for yucks. Okay, common law fraud. The defendant made representation to plaintiff. The representation was material. The representation was false. When the defendant made the representation, the defendant knew the representation was false or made the representation recklessly as a positive assertion and without knowledge of its truth. The defendant made the representation with the intent that plaintiff act on it. Plaintiff relied on representation, and the representation caused the plaintiff injury. That's the cause of action of common law fraud. The court in this matter was without jurisdiction, and according to the Screws Doctrine, see Screws v. U.S., as cited in the Affiant's earlier motions, the court had constructive knowledge of its lack of jurisdiction. Subsequent to knowledge of lack of jurisdiction, the court purported to assert authority over Affiant, backed by the implied force of armed bailiffs and police. Screws versus U.S. Screws versus U.S. says that if a public official violates a ruling of this court and he be sane, he may not be heard to say he knows not what he does. So notice to the public official is given by the statutory law and the case law handed down by the courts. Every public official has a statutory duty to not only know the law relating to his office, but also all of the court cases relating to his duty. Now, on the surface, that sounds like a rather large task for an official to come up to, but it's really not. There's a lot of case law out there, but most of it has nothing to do with public officials. And there are a lot of public officials. And for each particular office, there's very little case law and very little statutory law. So there's not a lot they have to learn. It's not like it's difficult. Oh, now we get to defamation. The defendant published a statement of fact. The statement referred to plaintiff. The statement was defamatory. The statement was false. with regard to the truth of the statement the defendant was acting with actual malice, negligent, or liable without regard to false strict liability. The plaintiff suffered pecuniary injury unless injury is presumed. And in this case, injury is presumed. He accused me of being a criminal. And he published his criminal accusations in public court documents. I was mortified. The court published, by making records public in the court record, allegations against Affiant the court knew or should have known were false. Said records accused Affiant of being a criminal and thereby subjected Affiant to public ridicule. And here I am, a famous radio star, and they do a thing like that to me. I was crushed.
Okay, look, we have some callers.
Okay.
Did you want
to... The point of this is, whenever you file a civil action, never just write the civil action stating all the rotten, crappy stuff they did to you. Rotten, crappy stuff they did to you are not causes of action.
Right.
I mean, it could be a cause of action, but if you don't state the rotten, crappy stuff they did to you in the terms of a recognized cause of action, the other side will give you this a really annoying motion to the court saying the petitioner makes no claim for which relief can be had, and move the court to summary judgment.
Yeah, and the other side would be right.
They'd be right.
You can't just go complaining about things. You have to. It has to be legitimate causes of action supported by precedent.
And for those of you who like to read comic books, the O'Connor's causes of action is a comic book without the pictures.
Yeah.
You read all these things you can beat the crapola out of from with, and it is a hoot.
Okay, we're going to go to our callers now. We've got Chris from Oklahoma, Gail from Minnesota. We're going to go to Chris. Hey, Chris, thanks for calling in.
Congratulations, you two. Welcome back on the air. We're glad to hear you here in Oklahoma City. It's great.
Thank you.
I missed having you on the air the last, 3.5-4 weeks?
I know, us too.
How are things going down there? Are you keeping up with the election results?
Yes. Vicki and Karen will be calling in this hour, very hour.
I'm watching intently. Our good friend Charles Key is up for re-election this year, and
yeah.
The results are coming in. I know I helped him in his last campaign, and they are actually checking the hand-counted votes every part, every ward of his particular district.
All right.
Yes, and... We're watching intently. Hopefully, he'll be able to get back. His opponent had no experience and was very little notoriety, so we think it'll be confident he'll win again. So, anyway, just had a quick question as far as what are your thoughts about the integrity of the elections in Texas?
Zero.
There's integrity
there's
in the elections?
There's zero. Anytime there's a voting machine, there's never integrity. I'll put it this way. The only way that I would accept a voting machine at all is the only case I would accept a voting machine is just for the printing of the completed ballot, you know, where, like, say I go in, instead of having me to mark on a little pencil with a pencil on a fill-in-the-bubble like you did in elementary school or whatever, I don't mind going in and using the touch screen to pick my candidates and actually create the ballot. But then I want the machine to print the ballot, and then I bring the ballot and put it in a box, and that's what gets counted. That's the only case I would be in agreement with using a voting machine at all, in which case it wouldn't even be a voting machine. It would just be a ballot creating machine, because it's the counting that's what really matters.
Yeah. Just to change the subject real quick, any updates on Sheriff Frank and his results?
I'm trying to obtain those results right now, but apparently all the computers in the house need updates of various plugins in order to look at these things. So I'm actually updating plugins on another computer right now.
Good.
Listen,
I know you have some other callers on the line. Again, congratulations. I look forward to joining you guys.
Thank you, and thanks for calling us in. It's always good to talk to you, Chris.
Likewise. You guys have a great evening. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye. Hey, Craig, keep us up to date. Call back in and keep us up to date on what's going on with Charles Key.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks. Bye. All right. We're going to go now to Gail in Minnesota. Hey, Gail. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, welcome back. It is such a great treat to have you guys back on the air. I kid you not.
Oh, thank you so much. We're glad to be back, believe me.
Oh, it seemed like forever. It's so good. I was very concerned, but it is a treat, so hooray.
Well, we appreciate that. And I know that we have been in contact with listeners or making posts on the forum, and that's because I really didn't have much news or what to say, and I didn't want to make people empty promises or say we're trying to do this or we're trying to do that, and so we just laid low until we knew for sure we were able to do something, and then we just did it. And I found out if you want something done right, you just got to do it yourself. So I set up my own radio station.
What I found out about all of this is if you want something done right, you got to get a woman to do it.
Well said.
And I did.
Finally, pearls of wisdom from Randy Kelton.
There you go. Well, I have a quick question to ask you, and it's not election-based, although I will say when I went in to vote today, I wrote Ron Paul so many places it was hysterical. if you remember, I'm in the middle of a really challenging divorce custody battle with a judge that has a notoriety for being one of Minnesota's unjust judges, and in Dale Maven's book. I was in pretrial again this morning, and it was pretty interesting. My attorney stood up and requested the judge throw my husband in jail because he's been doing, he is in contempt of court for like about 8 or 9 different court orders the judge did, and the judge will not uphold them. And the judge, I'm wondering what the judge actually screamed at my attorney, told him to sit down, and my attorney was still standing up. And he said, if you don't sit down and shut up, I'm going to throw you out of the courtroom. And he also said to my attorney, when my attorney tried to bring up that my husband was manipulating our son by scheduling him into additional basketball that had nothing to do with our son's school, just so my husband could coach, and it's usurping like 18 weeks of parenting time with me. The judge said, I thought this was in the best interest for the kids. That this is supposed to be in the best interest of Gail. I didn't know that. And the judge just got very hostile. And I'm wondering, and he even threatened the attorney. He said, you know, I'm the one that decides our attorney fees and everything else. And right now, you know, you're not in my favor at all.
You should have asked the judge, how much does it cost us to get in your favor, Bubba?
Yeah, really.
I really believe that he is getting money.
Some,
I just don't know how to prove it.
Have you requested all the judge's financial records?
No. Where do I go to request them?
You do that with discovery.
Of the judge?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
You need to make sure that he's not, doesn't have some investment with his attorney or with your husband.
Well, see, I uncovered that my husband also has a brand-new Corvette, and he was crying blues on how he has no money, and then I found out he has a new Corvette, and he has 3 new 08 vehicles and an 09 for the company, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Anyway, he bought the Corvette while he had 5 checks he hadn't paid me for yet, and when my attorney brought that up to the judge, my husband said, oh, can I explain? I got that for only $30,000, and it's a $75,000 car, and I don't have payments on it. And I thought, well, hello, does that tell you he's paying cash, and he's letting our stuff balance? And the judge just said, well, so if he bought something now, that has nothing to do with what you get. And my attorney was trying to say, it has everything to do, because they're still married. Even though they're legally separated, she's still entitled to half of everything until they're divorced. And the judge says, no. If they're legally separated, she doesn't get anything more past the date of a legal separation. Do you know anything about that?
That was a question that came up recently, and no, I didn't know the answer to that question.
I would like to know.
Yeah, it would seem that once you're legally separated, that you're not a couple anymore. But I don't know what the law actually says, because you are technically still married. and both of you are still technically responsible for all of the debt. But then again,
yeah, I would say the separation doesn't have anything to do with it, because the marriage contract is a legal contract under the state.
Well,
and so whether you actually live together or not, it's still...
If you separate and the husband creates a horrendous amount of debt during the separation that you had nothing to do with, are you responsible for half of that?
Wait a minute. Now, what do you mean creates a horrendous debt? Now, with debt, it's a different story, because when you make applications for credit cards or mortgages or whatever else, you make it in your own name. So if the husband wants to go and get a credit card in his name and rack up all the debt, the wife has nothing to do with this, okay? Mm-hmm. It has to do with assets. Okay, that's what is separated. Okay, a judge has no legal authority to take a credit card that was in the husband's name and say, okay, wife, you now have to pay half, and vice versa. If the wife has a big credit card in her name, a judge has no right in a divorce proceeding to say, okay, no, husband, now you have to pay half. They can't do that. They do that. They do that. But guess what? It's just a gentleman's agreement. It has no bearing. It has no enforceable power at all, because you personally are making a contract with the credit card company that has nothing to do with domestic courts.
See, this goes with the...
Now, I know for sure, I've talked to many people about that, plus experience. The debts, racking up debts and things. Now, put it this way. Say you have a debt in both of your names. Like, say both of you applied as co-signers on a credit card. So from the original contract, the husband and wife were the original co-signers of the debt. If the husband goes and takes that credit card and does something with it, yes, the wife's responsible. But if it's in his name only, the wife's not. Okay, so I think that's the answer to the question right there. You have to look at the original terms of the agreement of contract and the debt.
Yeah, the thing of family law, it gets very
now
complex.
Property is a different story. Okay, property that is acquired that depends on what state you're in. Okay, if it's a community property state, then if he buys a car, it's half yours. But if he goes out and racks up a bunch of debt, it's not. You don't have to pay
so
half.
If he buys a car, the car is half yours and the debt's
there
all his.
There you go. Exactly.
But that's before the legal separation or even during?
No, that's until it's the divorce is final, at least in Texas.
Whoa. Okay, so his Corvette's half mine.
I would say, it depending on your state, I would say so.
It's community property state.
If it's a community property state and he bought the car before you're legally divorced, yes, it's half yours.
Yep.
Okay, and what about the credit cards that he put our card, he got us new credit cards, quote unquote, a couple years before, two, 3 years before he left, and he told me he was putting them in both of our names, but he was going to list mine first because I had a better interest rate.
If you didn't sign the application to have it in your name, it's fraud. He committed fraud.
Wait a minute. You have to sign. If you used the card, you can't claim fraud.
Even if he never put his name on as equally liable as me, and he never told me, he only put his name on as authorized.
That's fraud. Yeah.
That is fraud.
If he put
you as the account holder and himself as an authorized user, that is fraud, period. You have to sign as the account holder.
How can I get those papers? Because the judge today just blew up over everything. I came out of there feeling like I'd been hit by machine gun fire, and he would not back up on the business valuation of December of 12. And my husband has been, I know he's been hiding money. He's just, his stuff went through the roof with our business yesterday, or last year and this year, and he's not turning over any financials. And I'd like to get the credit card findings, because I know he had intent to defraud, and this judge doesn't want to hear it. And I think it's real that there's some devilish connection there. And I'm just.
If you can find evidence, file the fraud directly, criminally.
Yeah.
To who?
District attorney.
Okay.
File fraud directly.
Directly about my husband.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
are these credit card companies after you to pay right now, Gail?
Well, they were sending me all these harassment letters, and get this, one of the two cards was one we both used. It was our family card, and all my cancer treatment stuff was on it, besides stuff he bought and our family stuff. And the other credit card was his business card solely, and he had copies of it given to all, you know, a bunch of his different employees. They were the only ones that used it. He had almost $100,000 worth of debt on that alone that he had in my name, plus 50-some thousand on our personal one that he had just in my name, and he stopped paying once he moved out.
That's criminal fraud.
That's criminal fraud. And you may also want to go through Michael Biter's abatement process on this. And I think it certainly would apply because she never applied for this credit card to begin with. So if the credit card company's after you, I would abate it and say, this isn't me. I never made this application. I never agreed to take out debt with you people. Ever.
Okay, because they were coming after me, and then the judge told him he had to keep the cards in good faith, in good standing, and so it stopped ruining my credit because he was ruining my credit.
That's all a gentleman's agreement in family court. It's not enforceable.
And I tried to pay some of this one because I just thought, he's wrecking my credit. He's trying to sink me. And so then the judge told him he needed to do it, and finally after about 4 or 5 months, or 6 months or something, he started paying them, but every so often he'd just let them go again. So they, you know, every so often I'd get these sporadic harassment letters from Chase Manhattan. And it's like, I know it's fraud, and I know he's set the whole thing up to take all of our money, but I'm still fighting cancer and I'm tired, and I just need to know the fastest way to get this stuff turned around because I can't do it by myself.
It's not a fastest way.
Okay.
It's just not, there's no easy out here.
Okay, so Michael Biter's abatement and fraud, but I have to prove the fraud before I file it, don't I?
No.
No, you don't. You're just filing a criminal charge.
I thought you had to have evidence before you could file it.
Actually, you have to have enough evidence to give a reasonable person cause to believe that the fraud occurred.
Well, here's the reasonable evidence. Gail, you never signed an application applying for credit in your name to these companies. You never put your signature on anything.
And he defrauded the nature of the credit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you could probably even obtain the original application papers in discovery or have them subpoenaed in a criminal case to say this isn't my signature. You know, because it sounds to me like you thought he was taking out a credit card in your name, and I mean in his name, and that you were going to be the authorized user.
Right.
You know, and instead he took it out in your name and made himself the authorized user. Now that's fraud, period. I mean, you just cannot take out credit in other people's names, period. I mean, even if you guys had agreed that the card would be in both of your names, the credit card company would still want to talk to you and still want your signature.
Well, see, and he's done other stuff that the judge keeps poo-pooing. Like he kept doing this. I was trying to put the marriage back together because I didn't know how bad things were. And he had me sign on, like, all these company vehicles. He kept telling me that we needed to put them in my name because my credit was better, you know, and we had a better interest rate. I didn't know he was planning on leaving me. Right now I have five vehicles in my name. He went back and added two seconds. Took out two more seconds without my signature to make the loan worse.
Okay, that's fraud on its face.
Okay.
So you'd have a good case for fraud. Just you can sue him directly for fraud, and you need to do it in a different court. Have you been filing complaints against this judge?
Not yet, no.
Well, this judge is creaming you, and you're not doing anything.
I keep bringing it up to the attorney, and I think the attorney's afraid of him.
Screw the attorney. File it yourself.
Okay.
The attorney's not going to do anything to bother this judge.
Okay.
Your attorney's the most dangerous man in the courtroom. He's the one that can give up all your rights.
He asked me to sign the power of attorney to him, and I just looked at him like he just asked me to shoot myself. And he said, well, you know, it'll be limited, but I'm not comfortable signing the power of attorney to my attorney.
Yeah, I wouldn't trust my attorney. They're the last one you'd want to trust.
Okay.
Go for the judge.
Okay.
You put the judge in a position, once you go after him, that it makes it look like everything he's doing is biased.
Okay, so I just file a criminal complaint on him. Well, he did a court order for me to sign IRS forms with my husband, and that's illegal. I don't have to be, I can't be forced to sign them, but my attorney did not want to turn a paper in from me that I wouldn't sign them.
And the court ordered you to sign them, then file criminal charges. Yeah, file criminally against the judge. If a judge abuses his discretion, that's a crime.
Okay.
And if they don't have a state crime, they've got a federal crime for it.
Okay, if I try to file, so I don't want to hold up because I know there are other people on the line, and you guys are so great. I'm sure 100 people at least want to welcome you back. But if I try to do this, is there someplace I can, a fax or something, I can send it in to have you just look at it before I send it in? Because I start stuttering when I think about this.
Yes, send it to Pewter Mail, P-U-T-E, or better yet, easier, Randy@ruleoflawradio.com.
Okay. Do I put something in the header?
Put the subject line in caps.
Okay.
That way I'm more likely to see it.
Okay.
And,
gotcha.
And for those who send me all their junk mail with caps, I block them.
And we have Vicky Karp on the line.
Okay, got it.
Okay, so we need to go.
Thanks a ton.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Thanks. Okay,
bye.
Okay, good. We've got Vicky Karp from Vote Rescue. Vicky, thanks for calling in. So what's the update?
Hey, Deb. Hey, Randy. Well, it's been an interesting day. We haven't had a whole lot of explosive events in Travis County that we know of. And we did cover 35 precincts today for some portion of the day. And so I think one of the most interesting things that we found, and we found a couple of incidents of this, and we verified them, where voting machines would break down and then, you know, after having been in use, and then servicemen from the county would come out and repair them, and then they would go into use. And everyone just seems to accept that that's okay, but the obvious problem to anybody that has looked at election integrity issues in the past is that we don't know what these people are doing to the machines. We just know that they don't work when they get there, but then they work when they left. Obviously, they did do some sort of repair, but we don't know what else they might have. They have an opportunity to do anything else they want to the machine, you know?
Right, exactly.
Like flip those little switches in the back.
What's that?
Like flip
Cindy?
Those little switches that reverse the votes.
Well, yes, exactly. So, you know, I think it's just, the fact that this goes on as a regular matter of procedure and that everybody thinks it's okay, to me and to all of us, is just completely outrageous. Because there's just, you know, well, I think the point's made is that there's this, you know, here's an opportunity for these guys to come in and do whatever. They fix the machine, but they can literally fix it both ways, repair it and fix it as well. There's an opportunity for that to happen. Nobody knows what they're doing. Nobody could challenge them. And we're not trying, I want to make clear that I'm not accusing anybody at the county of doing this. I'm just saying the opportunity is there, and nobody could stop it. Nobody would know. The election workers welcome them in and say, please fix our machines. And, you know, something mumbo-jumbo happens, and machines start working again. But we just don't know what else is happening at that same point when that repair is being done. And that whole piece right there is just so unacceptable. It is so untransparent that it as to be absolutely absurd.
Exactly. Well, Vicky, I wanted to make a little update report to you and the listeners on my struggling to find any current election results data in Travis County here. I had to download like 25 different plugins for my browser in order to find anything out from any of these websites, these news websites and the Travis County Elections website, the county clerk's website. And it comes up with these on the Travis County Clerk's website. When it comes up, there's a link for precincts reporting and precincts not reporting. And in the past elections, it would always have like a current tally, like they update it every few minutes, okay, is according to, on a precinct by precinct basis, what the totals are. Well, now they just have this one line PDF file that says Results will be posted as soon as possible after 7 p.m. Well, it's 8:30 now, okay? And then I'm going to KXAN.com website because a lot of times they'll just take the feed from the Travis County Clerk's website as far as current up-to-date. The only information that I can see, excuse me, on there is it says that Greg Hamilton, there's an article that says Greg Hamilton is in the lead for the sheriff's seat as of 8 p.m., but what I want to know is how in the hell did they find that out when I can't find out Jack on the Travis County Clerk's website? So that's a little bizarre, I think.
Well, maybe they're just self-proclaiming him the winner, as Bush had done for him by his cousin last time, you know?
Yeah, indeed. So, just so everyone knows, I'm still trying to find any minute-by-minute election results as they roll in for Travis County, and it's like pulling teeth between downloading plugins and cryptic, articles on KXAN and, you know, PDF files on the clerk's website that don't tell you anything.
Well, the process, it may be that they will start rolling in soon, but that, you have to wonder about those sheriff results. Very curious, but the way that the actual flow of numbers starts with these substations. There are four middle schools or high schools where all of the Travis County precincts are divided by four. There's something like, I don't know, there may be something like 240 of them. I don't know exactly how many there are, but they're divided by four, and so about, say, 60 will bring their results to a particular middle school. There's Travis High School, there's Dobie Middle School, a couple of others, and so what happens is that both election judges will drive in the same car with the voting machines, with the JBC computer that has the memory cards that have all the totals. And they deliver to these substations, and then they have this whole process for receiving the machines, the paperwork, the memory cards. Sheriffs are guarding these memory cards. They're there to guard the memory cards, at least. And there they download totals for the public of those 60 or so precincts that have come to that location. One by one, as the election workers come in, the memory cards are downloaded, and they actually run a totals tape for each of the precincts that delivers to that location, and then they tape them up on either a wall or interior window, a cafeteria window, something like that, so that if the public wanted, they could go over and take a look at those. We actually have our volunteers. We have four volunteers who are videotaping those results tonight because we intend to compare those to whatever is posted later on the county election totals, on their website, so we can do a comparison of election night results versus whatever happens to the numbers after tonight, and they end up on the website. And this is suggested by Bev Harris of Black Box Voting, so that's an additional monitoring action that Vet Vote Rescue put together for this election, because we were trying to do everything we can to have our eyes, you know, as many places as we could for these numbers. So we'll see how that comes out. It's going to take us maybe probably 2 or 3 days to analyze those results and make a comparison. But so in short, we had, I understand that there was some problem with people. Well, I can tell you that early voting, of course, there was a documented problem of straight party Democratic voting, where the presidential vote then was flipped to McCain. It showed up on the results screen, on the review screen, right before the voter would hit cast ballot. And we tracked down that story and verified it. We know that happened at the Fiesta Mart. I have not heard of any story like that today. I think a lot of people have been warned. We've been doing our best, and I think others have been doing their best to warn voters not to vote straight party, although interestingly enough, I was seeing these signs at several polling places that apparently were put out by the Democratic Party suggesting that people do vote straight party. I thought that was fascinating.
Interesting. And they're not supposed to give any kind of advice like that.
Yeah, it said turn the state blue, or turn the county blue, vote straight party Democratic, and these signs were sitting out, you know, like 100 feet out from the polling place. But considering And I just find that amazing. In fact, last week, the Williamson County election official, and I don't have his name handy, but he actually was recommending that people vote straight party, even though these incidents of vote slipping had started to occur in Travis County and in other parts of Texas. In fact, there have been reports of that in either, I think, 7 or 8 counties in Texas with different types of voting equipment, including the heart machines that we use.
Wow.
So it tends to indicate they can all be readily programmed to do whatever they want them to.
Absolutely.
Sure. I mean, you have to ask if one vote's going to flip to the opposite candidate and it's only the presidential vote.
My, what an odd coincidence.
And that happened in 2004 with these machines.
Yeah.
I'm wondering why it showed up on the screen. It would seem they could do all that in the programming underneath and nobody would have a clue.
Well, because they're idiots.
Well, you know, that's a great question, Randy. And so I think some people feel some sense of relief that it only happens once every, you know, not very often. But the question then is, well, how many times is it happening that you're not seeing it?
Not, they show it to you every once in a while so you feel like you caught it.
Oh, yeah, there you go. They're throwing
you don't see that can get you.
Yeah, they're throwing you. What they're doing, it's psychology. They're throwing you a bone, saying, oh, here's a mistake. And so then you catch it, and so you think that's the only time it happened, because if it looked like there were never any mistakes, then it would look too suspicious.
Right, right. Yeah.
So just assume it's just like cockroaches. When you see one, there's like 1,000 more somewhere.
I think that's just a great analogy. And, you know, I'd say that, you know, our county election officials, they run a tight ship logistically. I think that we have some very honest people, from what I can tell. I think we have honest people in charge of our elections here, but they continue relentlessly to defend this equipment, which has been decertified in like 4 states already, which has been proven by a PhD from Rice University who has actually reviewed the software of these heart systems and says that these machines are insecure, that you can't trust your vote with them, and yet these people who have never looked at the software, they are the ones that keep saying it's safe, and we're supposed to believe them, and that's what we call the big disconnect that's going on at our county and state level here.
Right.
Do you see any likelihood of the outcome improving? Or are we just looking at the same?
I do see the outcome changing, and I see progress being made at the pace of a snail.
Well, how is the turnout? That, I think that'd be a good indication of change.
Well, you know, here's something I can tell you from one precinct in East Austin that was very interesting. I was trying to determine if having a laptop to check in voters was going to, or not having one, how, what an impact that was going to have, because it seemed that most of the East Austin precincts did not have them, and other precincts seemed to have them. I was trying to determine for hours today if there was a potential case of discrimination going on there, but I did not determine that that was the case, because I wanted to see if it was going to create long lines in East Austin by not having the computers that speed up the checking in of voters, but I found very few lines, and I was asking one of the, some of the election workers at one of the East Austin precincts, one of the elementary schools, about it, and they said, here are the numbers we have in this precinct, and I can look it up and tell you in a minute which one this was. They said, we have 1,600 registered voters here, and 1,200 of them voted early.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
And today, 250 people had voted by, that was about 6:30 when I was talking to them.
That's pushing 90%.
Wow, that's
great. Yeah, so that'll give you an idea of this one particular precinct, and that one was on, I think that one was on, you know, that was Allen Elementary School on Gonzales Street.
This goes to what I've been saying, that a month or two back, we were saying that anybody who's not awake is not paying attention.
Yeah.
Today, anybody who's not awake is in a coma.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
This is an indication that the public's up in arms, and I think it's the best indication we can have.
Well, I think so, too. I think the voter turnout like this is, I don't even know in my lifetime if I've ever seen it. So, and I feel certain that the bailout, the AKA sellout of the American people, has a lot to do with that. I always wondered, with all the horrible things that our government has done and the hatred that other countries have for America because of it, I've always wondered for many years now, what is it going to take for Americans to wake up that we're being led by a bunch of criminals who are, you know, we're being led by a bunch of criminals who are basically creating policies around the world in our name but don't represent what it is that we want. And yet we see people still just bumping along, you know, going to their job and, you know, laying on the couch and watching Dancing with the Stars or whatever. I think a lot of people have so been so busy trying to survive, they haven't had time to pay attention. But now they're not able to survive like they were. And so now I think they are paying attention, and it was the wallet. That's where it finally hit them, is the wallet.
Always the case. Yeah. In my opinion, the best outcome we can have has nothing to do with Republicans or Democrats. It has to do with incumbents.
Mm-hmm.
If we throw them all out, flush all the crud down the toilet and replace them all, we may get more crud, but at least we're going to get inexperienced crud.
Well, I hope, what I would hope for, Randy, is that with continued reform and with elections that we can eventually get rid of these incumbents. I mean, when you look at their approval rating, which is, let's say, the approval rating of Congress, what is it, 12% right now?
Mm-hmm,
and then look at the rate at which they get reelected, 90%, 95%. Those numbers don't make sense.
Right.
No,
it's pure evidence of election fraud, right, time after time after time.
Absolutely. And, okay, this is the only, okay, Vicki, while we've been talking, I've been trying to pry into any, you know, up-to-date reporting by the precincts here in Travis County. There's still none, apparently. The only thing that's been posted are results of early voting. And in the early voting, just looking at the sheriff's race and here the tax assessor collector's race, Raymond Frank has come in with 83,000 votes for early voting, and Greg Hamilton, the incumbent, 182,000. So we're looking at 30% versus 64% approximately for early voting. And for the tax assessor race, Don Zimmerman is coming in at 74,000 with Nelda Wells Spears at 199. So that's like 26% to 69%. Now, this is just the early voting results. And here's some other early voting results on these propositions here in Austin. The Prop 1, should they appoint a city auditor, 129,000 said yes, 49,000 said no. Now, here's the kicker. The Prop 2, the local bailout bill, as some of us like to refer to it, the domain subsidies.
Yes.
And for listeners who are nationwide who may not know about this, Austin has its own bailout fiasco going on where the city wants to bail out a development company here in Austin, and everyone's up in arms about it. Almost nobody wants it, okay? And so this is for early voting for the bailouts, for the local bailout, 91,000 for prohibiting the bailout. Proposition 2 is to prohibit the bailout. Here's how many people voted to prohibit the bailout, 91,000. And here's how many people they say want the bailout, 98,000. So we're looking at 48% to 51%, where the 51% say, yes, we want to bail out the developers. Give me a break. Anybody that's spent any time in Austin at all, the developers are the big, bad, evil guys in this town. Okay, whether you're on the west side, the east side, the south side, the north side, doesn't matter if you're in Westlake Hills or central or east side, the developers are hated in this town. So for 51% of the people to say, yes, let's bail out the developers, I don't freaking think so.
No, don't freaking think so either.
I mean, if that's not evidence of vote fraud, I don't know what is. I mean, you just look at it on a national scale. How? I mean, look at the whole of America, how everybody was up in arms about Congress bailing out the banks. Well, it's the same thing here in Austin, if not worse, because these developers, they trash the Edwards Aquifer. Barton Creek is practically dry because of all the development over the Edwards Aquifer, and the Domain development is right on top of the Edwards Aquifer. No, I'm just, this is outrageous, Vicki.
Oh, my God. All the hard work, all of the many, many, many thousands of hours that so many wonderful people have put into that effort. And if that is an example of how, if the numbers are going to come out tonight, I hope it's not. I just hope it's not.
I know. Me too. Mm-hmm. Well, hey, Vicki, here's Chris from Oklahoma. He's probably calling to give us an update on the election results for Charles Key in the state Senate. So let's bring up Chris while we've got you on the line. Hey, Chris, you there?
Yes, Deb and Vicki, great job. I really enjoyed listening to your addition to the show.
Thank you.
I worked on it. Charles and I just talked. He received 58% versus 42% of his opponent. He's going to be in the state house for another 2 years, representing District 90, which is the western side of Oklahoma City. He is an ally for the folks that are, I can tell you right now, between him and Senator Randy Brogdon from Tulsa, you have two very good allies that are going to fight this NAFTA highway project, and if all things go right, it's going to stop stone cold dead at the Red River, guys.
Now, what was Senator Brogdon? Was he up for election this time, Chris?
I'm not quite sure, but I know both those two, and they have eight allies across between the state Senate and the state House that are going to fight on behalf of stopping the NAFTA highway, or the NASCO highway, and also fighting against the Biometric and the Real ID Act.
Wonderful.
Thank you guys for your time. I just thought you might want to know the update.
All right, thanks, Chris.
That's really great. Well, y'all, I've got to jump off the line here. I have to go in and meet Karen. And Karen had a real interesting day because she went to a county nearby. I don't remember which one, but she can fill you in.
Great.
But still does some hand counting of paper ballots. Did some videotaping with our vote rescue videographer, Terry Milton, and I know that she was planning also on calling in and giving you a little report, but
excellent.
I'm going to go relieve her because we've got our post-volunteer, post-election party going on, so I'm going to go take her place and let her give you a call here shortly so
okay.
She can fill you in, okay?
Sounds great. All right, you go get Karen, and she can call in whenever she's ready, and we're going to go to a break in the meantime.
Okay. Hey, thank you all so much for what you're doing and for the opportunity to come on and give people an update. Really
of
appreciate
course.
It a lot. Appreciate everything you do.
Thank you. Thank you, Vicki.
All right. Talk to you later.
All right. Talk to you later.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. We are going to break. That was Vicki Karp from Vote Rescue. We'll be talking to Karen Rennick from Vote Rescue coming up shortly. That was also Chris Emery from Radio Free Oklahoma. You're listening to Deborah Stevens and Randy Kelton on The Rule of Law. On Rule of Law Radio. We'll be back in a few minutes. Callers, if you'd like to call in, 512-646-1984. We'll be right back. Okay, we are back. Deborah Stevens and Randy Kelton on The Rule of Law on Rule of Law Radio. Ruleoflawradio.com, that's where you can hear us. Also, you can call in 512-646-1984. You can also listen on our listener line, 512-485-9010. We're kicking off our new broadcast tonight. We will be returning to our normal schedule, Mondays, Thursdays, and Fridays at 8 p.m., 8 to 10, Mondays and Thursdays, 8 to midnight, Fridays. So stay tuned, call in tomorrow night. Tonight we are going till at least 10 p.m. Central Time, maybe longer. So if you'd like to call in, please do so. And in the meantime, still can't find anything out about any up-to-date poll reporting. Okay, for Travis County, it's almost 2 hours since the polls have been closed, so that looks very suspect to me, because in the past, it's generally only been half an hour or so before they start posting results, you know, at least on a precinct-by-precinct basis. So we'll be keeping you posted. I do have early voting results. Those are available on the Travis County website, co.travis.tx. So in the meantime, Karen Rennick should be calling in very soon, and we've got a couple of callers on the line. We've got Dominic from Texas and Lee from Arizona, so why don't we go to our callers? We're going to go to Dominic from Texas. Hey, Dominic, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, I want to welcome you all back.
Thank you.
Well, nice to hear your voice. I was going through withdrawal symptoms.
Oh, us too, man. Now, I didn't know what to do with myself on Mondays and Thursdays and Friday nights. Well, on Fridays I've been having gigs, but I was like, oh, I'm supposed to be on the air right now.
Right. And what you're talking about the voting, well, they have to make it look like if it's a close call, like what you're saying about the proposition to bail out the
The proposition to the, too?
Yes.
Yeah.
Since there's so much opposition to it, they have to make it real close. It mm-hmm. depends on how much opposition there is to it as to how close they have to make it.
Indeed, the more opposition, the closer it is to the 50% mark, but we're still going to lose.
Yes, unfortunate. But as long as we wake people up in the process and, you know, more people, like they're talking about, more people are getting involved now in these voting process.
Well, Dominic, get this. Okay, I don't know if you're in Austin. I
yes.
think you are. Okay, did you get one of those big, slick-looking, laminated color, like 11 by 14 mailings from Will Wynn, Mayor Will Wynn, about the bailout thing, about the domains bailout?
Yeah, but as soon as I saw his face, I threw it away.
I know. I mean, see, it was ridiculous. It's like, you know how they have the saying around here, keep Austin weird?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, so on the top of this slickster mailing, it's like, help Austin keep its word. We
yeah.
promise these guys, and blah, 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 blah. And me and Jerry are just sitting here wondering, Who paid for this? How much did it cost to send out these gigantic poster-sized, full-color laminated things in the mail everywhere, pushing this bailout?
Exactly.
Well, it turned out, well, Jerry did more research into it than I did, but it turns out that these developer companies were the ones that paid for the mass advertising campaign propaganda to, of course, fund themselves.
Yep. Spend a little bit, but make a lot in a return.
Yeah, it was like $750,000 or something is what they spent on these mail-outs, you know, hoping to get billions in return, of course. So anyway, well, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying that the good thing about more people going out to the polls is now more people can see what we've been talking about the manipulation. And with their actions, they're going to help us wake up even more people.
Yeah, I think we're at a time everybody's going to start to wake up, and legal reform is going to do much better. I think we've all, those of us who have been awake for a while, have been in training. Life has been getting us ready for this time. I even spoke to my brother-in-law. He's quite a bit older than me, and he was one of those guys that if you got a deal, he had a better one. And if you bought something, he had something better than you had. And just knew everything until he lost $40,000 when Lehman Brothers went down. And all of a sudden, his younger brother-in-law wasn't quite as crazy as he used to be.
I know the feeling. I know the feeling.
Odd about how my sanity improves.
All of a sudden, you aren't so crazy anymore.
And you talk to people on the street now, and I talk about what I do, and I don't get these raised eyebrows like, you know, you're some kind of wacko anymore.
Mm-hmm. I know the feeling because I work for a company doing repair service, and when I talk to the people at their house, it's like, yeah, they get what's going on. A lot more people, like you said before, about when it starts affecting their pocketbook, they get more interested. They are waking up, numbers.
As the real estate market crashes into the toilet, guy that bought the $500,000 house 2 years ago, and after he bought it, it went up to $700,000. By next year, it'll be $200,000, and he still owes $500 on it.
Oh, boy.
Lots of ruck, Bubba. What about these concentration camps? You know, you got all these guys saying, oh, they're going to march us in there at gunpoint, all these foreign soldiers. They're not going to do this thing. They're going to stand there with open arms.
It's called the breadline, people. It's called the work camps. That's what happens in wartime and martial law. It's like, if you're starving, you don't have your own food, you don't have a job, it's like, come live here in the prison camp and work for the man, work for the state.
Big Bubba. Big Bubba's here. He'll take care of you. Come on
people,
down.
People liked it. Randy, weren't you telling me about in World War II, there's people that still remember that living in the work camps? Right?
No, not World War II. During the Depression.
The Depression, okay.
There was no money, there was no nothing, and guys got half a dozen kids. In those days, especially out in the more rural areas, you needed bigger families because, frankly, you needed the hands.
Yeah, labor.
But in those days, people knew more how to feed themselves.
Right.
In this one, I think our government recognized that the people don't know how to feed themselves.
Especially in urban areas.
Yeah, and things could get out of hand, and they built all these camps, and Big Bub would be standing there with open arms, just come on down, let me take care of you.
Exactly.
And we will march in there of our own accord.
Well, you speak for yourself.
I speak
for
yourself.
And that's something else I talk to people about, and it's like they really haven't thought that far ahead. What's going to happen when HEB closes down and all these other stores. A lot of people, until you start talking to them, they think that HEB is always going to be, always fully stocked.
Yeah, how can you trust a grocery store that's named after a man called Butt? Seriously.
Yeah.
But you know, listen, it's only been this generation or this generation and the generation before us that it is not commonplace for people to store up months, if not years, of food. I mean, this in the whole history of humanity, it has always been commonplace and necessary, and just considered this is what you do, that you store up provisions, because there'll be some years that are feast and some years that are famine. And so when you have the years of double portion, as they call it in the Bible, you save up, you know. And this even has nothing to do with government. This just has to do straight up people taking care of themselves. Oh, but nowadays you're a kook. You're one of those conspiracy nuts. Yeah, you're a tinfoil hatter if you store up food.
Wacko Mormons.
Yeah, well, they're the ones that are going to be coming banging on my door. Sorry.
Yeah, because the farmers are also paid so they don't...
So they don't grow?
So they don't produce, yes.
Exactly.
When I was 16, 15, I raised 2/10 of an acre of cotton. I lived in Tennessee, and the farm I was staying on, he had a 2/10 of an acre cotton base. At the time, they apportioned land for cotton. You could only grow what you had a base for. But they came and told the guy I worked for that if you'll set aside 2 acres that's tillable and not till those 2 acres, you can go ahead and grow that cotton somewhere else as if you hadn't grown it. So I raised this cotton and I made $96 on 2/10 of an acre. They paid him $120 not to grow it. Is this crazy?
Well, I guess they were teaching people not to be self-sufficient.
Exactly. And, you know, I looked at it even then and told the guy I live with, isn't this a little nuts? He said, of course it's crazy. If I can't make money growing cotton, I'm not going to grow cotton. I'll grow something else. You don't have to pay me not to grow it. And this is going to there's going to be a lot of readjustment. I don't look for it to be as bad as a lot of them say, because we have such a tremendous capacity to produce that we didn't have back in the Depression. But in the first 6 or 8 months, it's going to get real ugly. Fortunately, my parents were sharecroppers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we were from the farm, so if you needed to do something, you did it. My brothers and I, although we grew up in Chicago, anytime something needed to be done, Daddy just told us, go get it, go do it. And there was no argument about it. I mean, we did not live in a democracy. He made that very clear.
Well, can't be a democracy with parents and children.
But it wasn't until I was well grown that I realized I was... working with my son, he was about 4 or 5, and I was helping him do stuff and teaching him things, and it occurred to me one day that I don't remember my father ever being around me or doing anything with any of these of us kids, but what he wasn't teaching us. Everything for him was an opportunity to teach. My father died about 40 years ago, and when he died, he was about the most ignorant old SOB I ever met in my life.
Don't you be talking about that way about your father.
Well, I'll be darned if you don't get smarter every year.
See, there you go.
And he taught us to do things. He taught us to be functional. This coming crisis doesn't frighten me. Heck, I can do anything. Welder, mechanic, machinist, carpenter, plumber, electrician. This is what we're going to need, is people who can function. And we have a society now of people who go to work and do one thing all their lives. What are they going to do when they don't have that job anymore?
Well, I don't mean to interrupt you, but the ones I think are going to be worse are the ones that are just sitting, you know, waiting for that monthly welfare check.
Mm-hmm.
And when that doesn't come in, they're going to be trying to see who was prepared, you know, close by and go and break into their house. That's the way I see it.
They're going to have, and they'll have no choice.
Mm-mm.
The choice between honor and starvation. I can hardly see someone starving to death honorably. I don't see that happening.
Mm-hmm. It's rough.
But then again, my mother tells me about how bad the depression was. But I never heard of anybody starving to death. Not a one. Hard times, difficulty, but nobody starved to death. And there was crime, but I never hear much about crime during the Depression. It was as if the poor people didn't turn into bloodthirsty savages. But what they did do instead is turn to one another rather than away from one another. And they all became communities. We're building up some more callers.
All right. I didn't want to take up too much time. I just want to welcome you all back.
Thank you, Dominic. Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you. Okay, we have some more callers on the line. Lee from Arizona, Jim from Texas. More callers are coming in as we speak, unscreened, first-time callers into this system. But before I take the calls, okay, some updates on some election results. Okay, somebody at the Travis County Elections Office must have been hearing me rant because they have finally posted some results.
They must have finished their early manipulation.
Yeah. Okay, so we've got, as of 8:30 p.m., we've got some, and it's now 9:07. Well, they must have just posted this because I've been checking continually. Okay, for president... first time in years and years and years, they've programmed the machines to have Obama kick butt on the Republicans. So right now, in Travis County, Obama's taken 66% so far, including precincts that have reported, and McCain is 32%. So it looks like Texas is going to be a red state this year, and that's neither here nor there for me, but what I am happy of, even though I know the two-party system is a fraud, I have to say I am very pleased to see that Mr. Cronian, I call him, John Cornyn, I call him John Cronian, is losing massively to Richard Noriega. Yes, I want that guy out of here, man. I cannot stand John Cronian.
I have a Cornyn story sometime.
Oh, God, I can't stand him. I am so glad he's getting his behind kicked. 105,000 votes to 184, but this is just Travis County now. I don't know if this means he's going to lose the election altogether, so I have to look at the statewide, but at least here in Travis County, he's losing his behind big time, and that says something because it's a seat of government here.
Best thing we can do is flush the incumbents.
Absolutely. Now, looking at the sheriff's race, boy, our buddy Raymond Frank, he's not doing so good, Randy. 85,000 to 186,000. He's got 30% of the vote. I don't think Frank's going to make it this time.
I think it's been bought and sold already.
Well, yeah, but there's another problem. Let's just assume for a second maybe some of the voting is legitimate. There's so many people who are so tired of the Republicans. They just walk in there and they vote straight ticket. Okay, but then they forget that there are some very important races. So you never want to vote straight ticket because what happens with the voting machines, if you vote straight ticket, then these races don't come up, okay? So you don't get to have a choice there. And our buddy Don Zimmerman, he's not doing too well either. So, and then the other race I cared about, dealing with Melissa Goodman running for Chief Justice, no wait, running for one of the District Judge, she's not doing too good either. District Judge, 427th Judicial District. I wanted to get her in. She's not doing too well either. So, at any rate, looks like Cronian's the only guy that we're getting out of here that I cared much about. But at any rate, so those are some preliminary Travis County results here. Let's move on to our callers. We've got Lee from Arizona. Hey, Lee, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind tonight?
Just an update. You guys have been off the air, and welcome you back.
Thank you.
I got your email, and I appreciated hearing from you, so I thought I'd better get on. Anyway, an update. The one caller that you had talked to concerning the judge, she had a similar incident as such as I did whenever I called in before. Now, the divorce is finally final. However, there's still some glitches. I ended up filing a lawsuit against my attorney. I put the judge on judicial review, and I put the attorney on judicial review.
Wonderful.
So you got to do that. However, I am having some issues since this judge took me to cleaners and basically bankrupted me. She gave me a judgment for $77,141, which now makes me ineligible for legal aid or medical help or anything. And I was in a car wreck, and I need surgery on my hip. So this judge has really put it to me big time. She knew exactly what she was doing, and evil people like that need to be removed. So whatever you do, if you feel that you've got a problem, you can file with your state judicial review board on the judge, which is a total separate entity from your attorney, you can file with the state bar.
Yeah, and those hurt them. They hurt them badly.
Well, I certainly hope so. I have not heard back from them at all, other than to get a letter stating that they received my stuff. And what I did, I took and I went down, it cost me some money I really didn't have, but I borrowed it, and I got the digital recordings, and I put the record now on my computer, and I copied my case as it went through. And every reference that I put in was to to the digital recording, so they have to review it. And once they review it, I'm sure something's going to happen here.
Oh, I can tell you what's going to happen.
What?
They're going to throw it in the trash.
What?
Yeah, I'm telling you, that's a good thing. It's a good thing. You see, if you file a valid bar grievance against an attorney, the bar is going to throw it in the trash. So, file a bar grievance every time you turn around. The reason it's a good thing is not only do we know that they're going to throw it in the trash, their insurance carriers know they're going to throw it in the trash.
So, but it's still on record, though, right?
Oh, yeah. It goes on record that it's filed. So, and they have to notify their insurance carrier. If they get a bar grievance and don't notify their insurance carrier, they're not covered. So what would be the point? If they get, here in the last show we did, Russell Morton called in. We were talking about this issue.
Okay. That
since the only way the insurance carrier has of gauging this level of risk is not by the number of valid bar grievances filed, only by the numbers. So if I file a bar grievance against an attorney claiming that no good shyster scum, he parts his hair on the left, if you can believe that. He should be disbarred. And the bar will say, well, this is a bunch of crapola, and throw it in the trash. His malpractice insurance is still going to go through.
It still goes up because since all bar grievances are thrown in the trash one way or the other, the insurance companies have no way of determining which ones are valid and which ones aren't, so they just treat them all as true.
Yes. Russell Mortland got on the show, and he said that in his bankruptcy proceeding, the original attorney had changed firms, and an attorney that originally handled the case came into court and testified that they were trying to tell him what a no good rotten scoundrel Russell was. Said that Mr. Mortland filed 3 bar grievances against me, and the next year our firm almost couldn't get malpractice insurance.
Wah.
And it nearly doubled when they did.
Wah.
Sorry, brother.
Helping other people from this guy. I mean, this attorney, even the judge said, even she said, whenever I hired another attorney, I was going to try to appeal. The problem was he didn't object to anything that would have been able to, you know, he...
Go down to the legal library and look, get a book on legal malpractice and go through it. You can sue that attorney for everything.
When I already had a suit against him for $450,000.
Well, go get a book on malpractice so you see all of the issues you can raise in your suit against him.
Okay, now, what about this jurisdictionary? They keep sending me stuff in my emails to get the book. It's like $216.
It would be the cheapest investment you will make.
Absolutely. Jurisdictionary is excellent.
He will go through all of the basics.
That's all I wanted to know. I'm going to get it then. I just wasn't sure if it was, you know.
I had a guy from Pennsylvania call me, and he's talking about a case he's handling, and he told me what they did, and I said, well, you know, that kind of sounds like you ought to file a writ of mandamus, and he said, I did. And I talked a little while, and something else he should do, and he said, I did. And I said, no, wait a minute. Why are you calling me? He said, well, you know, you're the one that told me to get jurisdictionary. I said, well, yeah, I did. I said, well, that's why I did it. It was in there. All the basic stuff was in there. And
cool. That's
why I tell people, get jurisdictionary. Go through the course, then call in. Then you and I, we get to talk about really sophisticated stuff.
And it's perfect for homeschooling, too. Frederick Graves wrote it so that you could use it as a homeschool tool starting at the eighth grade.
Well, see, he only did it incidentally so that you could use it as a homeschool tool. He wrote it for eighth graders.
He wrote it for lawyers.
No, he wrote it so lawyers wouldn't understand it. but it is, it's a great set of basics. These are all the basic tools. And I can assure you that the attorneys aren't going to know what most of them are.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Graves talks about that. When he got out of law school, he didn't know anything about practice of law. He knew about legal theory, but the actual practice, how to file motions, when to file motions, how the actual process of the court
went, procedures and things like this.
He didn't know anything about that.
What's necessary to put in a motion for it to be effective.
And these attorneys, they learn that in practice. But it seems like they never read the code.
They don't.
You go through that course and you've got all the basics that the attorney has, and you don't need all of his legal background. You're only addressing one particular issue. He has to be knowledgeable across a wide range of issues. You only care about this one. See, I'm not an attorney, but there's not an attorney out there that wants to deal with me on due process.
You can be my attorney.
I'll be real quick to tell folks, well, you know, like the woman from Gail from Minnesota was asking about family law, and I was real quick to tell her, I don't know. You know, I could give you some uneducated opinion, but it's not my field. It's not what I know. Due process, I know. And that no attorney out there wants to deal with me on due process for one primary reason. I actually read the book. I have yet to find an attorney who has.
Sure.
I was sitting with my prosecuting attorney, the county attorney in Wise County, I was from. We are good personal friends. He introduced me to his new assistant. He said, Jim, I'd like you to meet Randy Kelton. Now, you might have heard people around the courthouse saying that Randy Kelton's crazy. Well, you're right. They're right. He is. But if he tells you the law is a certain way, you better listen to him because he read it. And that was his opinion of me. I talked to him about it, and we spoke about illegal practice of law. And he said, really, you have to be careful with this because you could be charged with illegal practice of law. I said, no, illegal practice of law, you have to hold yourself out as an attorney and be paid. It has to be both of them. He stopped and looked at me a minute, turned around, pulled the Code of Criminal Procedure off the shelf and read it, and that's exactly what it said. He said, you're right. I said, I know. I wouldn't have told you that if I hadn't read it. Well, tell me, Greg, when was the last time you read the Code of Criminal Procedure? He said, well, I don't know that I've ever read the whole thing. Oh, Greg, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. He said, well, frankly, Mr. Kelton, I don't think I know a single attorney who has. Greg, that's pitiful. He said, yeah, no, that's what you're up against.
Well, it's an advantage for us.
Absolutely. Tremendous advantage. Because, you know, they never read it. They never bothered.
Well, that means we get to whoop them upside the head.
Well, we have another advantage, even greater. When I go before a judge, I don't have to worry about that judge screwing my next client to get back at me. I don't particularly care if that judge doesn't like me. I don't care if he's angry. I don't care if I ruin his day. Too bad, Bubba. We can do that as pro se's. The attorneys can't. We can do outrageous stuff to the judge and the prosecutor. The attorneys can't. Deborah's motioning at me. We've got a lot of calls.
I was just saying we had another call on the line. Did we answer your question, Lee?
Yeah, pretty much. I wanted to ask one more question about the election.
Okay, go ahead.
When people send in the, when they mail in their ballots, what prevents and what assurances do we
Lee?
Eating them, or, you know, what happens to them whenever they, once they get mailed and they go in there, what happens?
Okay, well, that's a very good question. Now, Arizona is different from Texas. In Texas, I don't know that we have much dealing of mail-in ballots unless you're in the military and overseas, or you have some legitimate reason of why you can't make it to early voting, because we usually have a week or 2 weeks of early voting here in Texas, so that for people who are traveling. And so I think the only, in this state, mainly the only application of mail-in ballots is with military. Now, I don't know what's in your state, but I mean, it's a good question, and this is a question that we all have about the voting machines in general and just about the entire election. There's no, how do we know what's happened? How do we know how it's counted? I mean, you know, every time I go on one of those voting machines and I push that button and it says, thank you, your ballot has been cast, you know, I'm like, really? Well, I don't know that because
I
don't
get cast. Has it been counted?
Yeah, because I don't get to watch them count the votes, you know.
And the mail-in's the same way. You would hope that they don't throw half of them, take half of them out and throw them in the trash if they don't like them.
Or all of them, or whatever. I mean, I know that if they had paper ballots hand counted in public view at the precincts, I could sit there all day. I could make sure the box is empty when it starts. I could stand there all day and watch as everyone puts their vote in. I could make sure the ballot box isn't stuffed. I can sit there and watch them take it out one by one. I can watch as the election judge looks at the ballot. I'll look at it too and make sure he makes the right tick mark in the right column. And I'll make sure it's added correctly too and that the results are posted on the precinct door. Then I'll drive around to every precinct and count them all up and make sure it's reported correctly to the county. That's the only way we're ever going to have real elections, people. The only way.
Yes.
Period. You have to watch every single move these people make. And I'm not saying anything about the election judges. They're mostly honest people. Okay? It's the people that implement these systems that is the problem. Secretary of State, these examiners, the companies that want to make money off of it all.
I'm an electrical engineer, and frankly, I love technology. But technology has its place. It has no place in counting votes.
Mm-mm.
Period. That's a
no
fool
way.
Activity.
No way. And the paper trails thing, the Holt bill, all that kind of crap, that is more dangerous to our republic and to our elections than anything else because it fools people into thinking that there's a safety net. Okay, these paper trails, forget about it. We need to have paper ballots, period, that are counted. And you know what? I've talked to election judges, all right, that have been election judges for years and years and years. They don't like the voting machines. They rather go back to doing it the way it was done from the beginning, and all this crapola excuse about how, oh, it's too expensive, or the paper, are you kidding me? It's billions and billions and billions of dollars more expensive to implement these voting machines and pay off these proprietary vendors and all this kind of thing. And the other big excuse, which is also a farce, is that, oh, well, it's going to take too long to count. No, it doesn't. It doesn't take too long to count. What they do, what they've always done, is the election judges, they count the ballots as they're being cast, okay? They don't have the box sealed and wait until the end of the day and then take 6 hours to count everything. They just count it all day long as the votes come in.
They have to be there anyway.
They count it all day long as the votes are coming in, okay? And they're bound by secrecy not to discuss the preliminary results until the polls close. And then by 7:15, 7:20, 8 o'clock at the latest, they've got the results. They even usually come up with them faster than the machines. Case in point, 9:04 p.m. by the time anything was posted on the county website tonight, the polls have been closed for 2 hours. Okay, so paper is the only way to go. And so I was talking to Randy about how can we give these voting machine companies a way out, because you got all these contracts and all these people that. Congressman funding them and all the back scratching and everything else. So it's like, okay, well, we can use a voting machine still, but only to create the ballots. Okay, still, the ballot prints out, and then you put it in the box, and that's what gets counted.
Then you don't have a problem with people marking the wrong spot or smearing their marks. Or
the hanging chad and all this kind of BS. You know, any kind of electronic or mechanical counting, forget it. The only way to really have proper counting is that human beings have to count it, and usually what they do is they set up a chain of at least three people, okay? Every ballot is counted by at least three people, okay? And so that way, you mark your tick in the column, you pass the ballot to the next guy. He marks his tick, and then the next guy. And so that way, the results of all three people or more are compared, all right, to make sure that it's accurate. And then you got people like me standing over there watching them to make sure.
Yeah.
That's for you.
It's the only way. It's the only way.
Yep. So, true.
So, okay. So,
thank you guys for everything that you do for us. This is really neat. And I will let somebody else online now.
Okay,
oh, wait.
Great.
One quick thing before you go. I'll make this brief. If you're looking for legal materials, look for litigation guides, and the place to look is call some law firms, especially the bigger law firms, and say, hey guys, did you get all new litigation guides and such this year? If you did, I'd like to pick up your old ones if you want to get rid of them. You'd be surprised how much you can get for free. They'll be glad to get them hauled out of the way.
Yeah, because they get new versions every year, and then they've just got these stacks and stacks of books.
Yeah, try law firms.
Okay, I will do that.
Okay, thank you, Lee.
Thank you, and welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay, we now have Jim from Arizona. But before we go to Jim, I'm going to come with some more preliminary election results. I have just gotten some preliminary results as of 9:19 p.m., 10 minutes ago, off of the Secretary of State website here in Texas. And even though things may be somewhat going our way here in Travis County, it's not going our way overall. It looks like Cronin is probably going to take it. He's got 53% of the vote versus Noriega's 44. And as far as the presidential race, we've got 54% for McCain, 45% for Obama. I just don't see how that could possibly be true. I mean, considering how I just don't see how that could be true. I mean, Houston, San Antonio, Austin, I mean, there are so many Obama supporters. I mean, everywhere you go in all these major metropolitan areas, it's just like everywhere, it's just swamped, teeming with Obama supporters. I mean, this is obviously election fraud. So we got, looks like McCain's going to take Texas, and Cronin is going to keep his seat, unfortunately. So that's the preliminary results so far for the state of Texas here. And I just went over what's going on in Travis County. So now let's go to our next caller. We've got Jim from Texas.
Yes, hello.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to thank you for having your show. I lived up in Canada until 2000, almost 25 years. I'm from Pflugerville. And when I came back here, I couldn't believe what had happened to America that I'd left. And I can't believe what's happening to it until now. And something's been energized in me by listening to people that are getting involved, such as yourself, that people need to start getting very, very involved, because as a veteran, I just smell there's a very dangerous time ahead for a lot of people. And God bless you for bringing the message to the people.
I think you have good instincts. I'm a veteran myself, and I feel that same dread.
Yes, and the sad part about it is I just wish that there were more lawyers who would really, really get, and more personalities that would really, really get vehement with this government and not just debate it, but like everywhere I go, if I'm in a restaurant and I see these gulag Nazis, I call them Nazis, I start talking about, and I get a little loud, you know, and I know what my limitations are, but I ain't going quietly in the night.
Good.
And I'm having to learn a lot more of how to be a better and more effective activist. And I think, well, I feel that most people don't know how to get involved. They're wanting to get involved, wanting to be effective, but they don't know how. I, being a graduate of the 60s and the riots in America and Kent State and the experiences that I have had, kind of gives me a little bit of knowledge in hindsight, but younger people today aren't taking it lying down. I'm not saying that young people aren't involved. There are a lot of young people involved. And I think that I've been listening to a lot of more stations here. And even in Canada now, they're having the same problems in Canada with illegal immigration. A beautiful country has been trashed. I've seen it firsthand, what's happened to people, and it just really makes me kind of sick in one way and energized in another, that it's not a time for me to debate whether, you know, I think, I don't know what to say, that this is right or this is wrong. It's wrong what's happening here. It's all wrong. And it's scary as hell.
Yeah, it is. And there is something we can do. And
there is.
It seems to be the nature of things that human beings don't fix problems until they can't avoid the problems. And we're at the point where we can't avoid it anymore. And people are waking up. They're recognizing what's going on. The time is coming. We're in training. It's going to be a bunch of us who've been awake for a long time who are going to help lead a lot of others into understanding what's going on and implementing fixes. And here in Texas, I'm working on some fixes.
Me too.
Me and Deb are going to institute some fixes here pretty soon.
This is the first time I've listened to your show, and I didn't know 90.1 existed until last week, and now I can't stop listening to it.
Oh, that's so sweet. Thank you.
Because it's really bringing me back to the days when I demonstrated against the war in Vietnam and against the segregation movements, things that really did matter to me then when I got away then. And I'll tell you what happened to me was that I got beat by the police and put in jail several times, and I had to leave the country. So I was fortunate that I could immigrate to Canada, where I really embraced that country because it had something worth giving to at the time. But now it has changed too since free trade. It's gone very, very downhill, and there are people waking up. There are people waking up, and I'm one of them. And I'd like to know, do you have a mailing address or...
For snail mail?
Yeah, I don't have a computer. If I wanted to get involved and be in a helpful way, whom would I contact or just do any volunteer work?
Okay, well, we don't have a snail mail address at this time, but we will be setting one up soon. Actually, if you want to, anyone, and we had a request for this earlier, anyone who wants to mail us anything snail mail, use the P.O. box that was for WTPRN. So
WTPRN?
Yeah, WTPRN, We the People Radio Network, the network that we were on.
Okay,
so if you go, let me get this real quick here.
Yeah.
Okay, here's the snail mail address. Anybody that wants to send Randy and I any snail mail for now, use the PO.
Your name?
I'm Deborah Stevens.
Deborah.
Yes, Deborah Stevens, okay. or Randall Kelton. You can mail it to care of WTPRN, 11900 Metric. Metric Metric Boulevard J179.
Yeah.
Metric Boulevard
J179.
Yeah, J as in job, and
right.
The number 179, Austin, Texas 78758. You can send us
78758.
Yeah, you can mail us snail mail to that P.O. box for now. We'll be getting our own P.O. box pretty soon.
All right, because like people like me that have been wanting. To you just get it bottled up inside, and then you don't know what you can do. There's nobody to listen to you. You don't know whom you can share your feelings and thoughts with, and it just builds up in more frustration.
No. You can always call into our show, okay?
Well, there's more. I will, and there's more shows happening all over the country that people are waking up to. And wanting to know how to get involved. You know, this is very, very serious what's happening in America today.
Well,
it's very serious.
We still have our archives on.
Oh yes, on WTPRN, the archives will always be there.
Yeah, you can go back and download our archives. We've got a lot of things you can do.
Yes, absolutely.
If this is your first show, you
should go back and listen to our archives.
You'll find out what we're really about.
Yeah, we've been doing this for a year and a half already.
Okay.
On the air.
Okay. Well, I apologize for not listening.
Oh, it's okay, Jim. Good to have we got a first-time caller on our first show back on the air. This is great.
I have a little bit of steam has been let out now. You know?
Good for you. Good for you.
I see up into Canada. Now, Canada was a beautiful country. It embraced you. Long care week. I became leader of Canada under the premise that there would not be NAFTA. Much later was. We get all over the place. He was defeated. They still have NAFTA. And now the homeless people, by the hundreds and thousands, laying all over the streets of Vancouver, and every gang in the world is there, and the citizenry is preyed upon, and they are not allowed to have guns. The whole thing, you can see it right before your very eyes. If you're a tourist, you never see that. But
yeah.
If you live there and wear it every day, now there's murders. They never used to have murders in Vancouver, and there's two or three of them every now.
Yeah, well, the not allowed to have guns thing is definitely a major problem.
Well, that's the people that are doing the murdering are the criminals.
Criminals, okay. Criminals will always have guns. So that's why gun control does not work, because only law-abiding citizens will turn in their guns or not have ones. Criminals don't follow the law.
I like your approach. You're a no-holds-barred speaker. And that's what needs to be. People need to get Petrolik out here in the communicate in the TV, the radio, every form of communication needs to get just foaming at the mouth with people, because this is not a movie. You know, this isn't Hollywood here. This is really happening.
Yes, this is real life.
It's happening, and it just stinks. It stinks.
Yeah, you listen to our archives, and we will give you a lot of tools to change things. I'm in the process of putting together what I call a litigation engine.
What?
A litigation engine.
Yeah.
What it is, my specialty is due process.
Right.
I know due process frontwards and backwards. Now, that's about all I know, but I do know that one. And what I'm doing is for anybody that's been arrested.
Oh, I've been arrested many times.
Well, if you've been arrested in Texas, every arrest class presently proceeds. The only wrong is basically installed. I have a biggest corpus that demonstrates what laws they violate and why they do it the way they crimes they commit.
Well, my first experience as law getting arrested was simply because I had long hair. I've been arrested for killing.
Were you a truck driver?
No, I was a hippie. I was a damn hippie, you know. But I was a veteran, you know, and I was going to have fun. I was a former paratrooper, and I said, I had enough of this damned army, all of this BS. I said, I want to enjoy my life, and I'm going to have some fun. And I went about doing that. And in the process, I got arrested. I got pounced upon a lot by the police. I used to work up on the old Steiner Ranch doing, you know, stock work and other ranch work, and I would come to town, and I would come to town to have fun, and I would inevitably get arrested every time. That's because my hair was long and I had a beard, and it started with lowering in the road. Well, they do rednecks. I know what a redneck is. You know, you're talking to a man that knows what a redneck is, and they're just as bad as a smuck, if not worse. This has got to stop. This is 2008.
Well, we've got tools here to put a stop to it.
Well, by God, I'm going to be coming down there and talking to somebody. Because I've been talking to people already, and I've got an affidavit of inability to pay costs here. For the VA is trying to take my pension away from me, which they can't do.
Oh, boy.
You know, they are like going up against, it's like David and Goliath. And you really have a lot of legal, I'm not that person. You know, I've worked fishing boats and sawmills and farm work and what is that all? Still cannot communicate with that big of a giant.
We'll show you how to take them on.
Well, God, I'm take them on.
The rules. You listen to the archives, you'll see.
So if I want to hear, listen to the archives, I have to have a computer?
Yeah,
yes.
Or find somebody who's got one, get them to download them for you on the CD.
At WPP, how do you have...
No, we. It stands for We the People Radio Network.
Yeah, but is it...
It's www.wtrn.com. There? Yes.
See, people who aren't aren't computer literate are intimidated by all of these symbols.
Okay, well...
We don't know what it is.
Well,
I'm going to find out what it is.
Yes, you open up a web browser and just pull up Google... Okay, and that's a search, and just do a search for Rule of Law Radio, and you'll find us.
Deborah, if he's not computer literate, he probably thinks you're talking dirty to him.
Okay, well, listen. You find somebody to help you get on a computer and open up what's called a browser, so you can browse the internet. That's
well. I hope there are other people out there listening that are like me, you know, that are just so mad and fed up that they might not have. Tools to access, but they're going to get them.
I tell you what.
They want to go out and do something instead of just sitting around being mad.
How far from Austin are you?
I'm right here on Manchac Street.
Oh, good. Then Monday nights, go down to Brave New Books on Guadalupe and
Yes, it's at brave new books at Guadalupe at Martin Luther King.
All right.
Okay, it's right next to where the Domino's is. It's on the It's on the southwest corner. I'm sorry. It's on the northwest corner of Martin Luther King, at Guadalupe Street. And you go down
northwest corner.
The northwest corner of Martin Luther King at Guadalupe, and you go down there, and they have meetings and lots of great books, and you'll find a lot of like-minded people.
Yeah, every Monday night.
I remember my history, ma'am. My great-grandmother was an Indian, and so was my great-grandfather, and they lived on Holly Street. Between Holly and Martin Luther King was a Native Indian settlement, and she walked all the way to the old Confederate soldiers' home on Lake Travis Boulevard and washed linen. Walked from there all the way over there and home every day. And I've seen Austin go from that to what it is now. And I'm not going to lose my roots. I find it very important for me to try to live like a man and as a human being, traditionally, with some kind of reverence for this earth. And these people, these developers and these other people, I don't know what they believe. It's just maddening.
The developers. So Jim, speaking of the developers, what do you think about this domain subsidy thing here in Austin, our local bailout bill?
I think it sucks.
You tell them, Jim.
I'll tell you another thing. The condos that they built on 5th and Lamar, across from the Parks and Recreation Building's offices. It's a 5-story condo, 823 square foot townhome, sells for $369,000.
Hey, Jim, listen. Can you hold on for us? Because we got Karen Rank from Vote Rescue calling in to give us a report.
Okay, ma'am.
Okay, just sit on hold. Just stay right there. You can listen, but we got to bring up Karen here. Okay, just stay right there. We'll get right back to you. And Eldon from Ohio, we see you there too. All right, we're going to go for another hour. Files got confirmation. We on the radio for until 11 o'clock p.m. Central Time on all your favorite cool stations in Texas and Oklahoma, and also here on the internet on ruleoflawradio.com. We're now going to go to Karen Rennick. Karen.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, thanks for calling in. So this is Karen Rennick. Karen, tell us what's been happening today.
Well, today I was count in Nixonville, Alaska, and now then 10 kids. And somebody asked me to go up there, and I took Terry Melton's film, a documentary maker, and it's wonderful footage about what it's like to be able to vote on a paper, on a paper ballot and know that it's hand counted. So it was just really just inspiring. And we're gonna be taking the footage of various people that we interviewed and putting it together in some sort of a film and to educate people about what hand counting paper ballots is all about, because people, I don't think, really understand what it is. So that's what I did today. And
excellent. Can you give us an idea, like, was there proper chain of custody? Was there proper oversight? Were there multiple people counting the ballots to cross-check results and things like that? What did you find?
Well, unfortunately, couldn't actually go into the polling sites while they were counting. And that was the downside. They don't allow that. So we did not, personally witness, that part of the process. But we did speak to people who would be doing it later in the day. And from the descriptions, it sounded like they do the counting right there in the precinct. And if their numbers don't jive with the number of voters coming in, they just stay and recount until they get it right, or they find the discrepancy. I'd say the one flaw that still, I think, exists and that we were trying to get corrected when we were working the last session here in the state legislature is that the way the law is now, all the tally sheets and results and ballots go to the county office before the results are posted.
Hmm.
And that's where, obviously, things could you know, someone could interfere and you know, mess with whatever the results are, because we definitely think that the results have to at the proceeding.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's what they thought. So they're following law. And we'll try again this session that starts in January to get something passed that will correct that. Basically all we can do, but it was just really wonderful to talk to people, and they had so many people say, we believe in what you're doing, thank you for doing this. So it was very heartening to go up there. They do have machines, I mean, because they are complying with the Help America Vote Act. So there are people still, you know, that are trying the machines, but it seems like still there the majority of people do vote on the paper ballot.
That's great.
So anyway, it was just really great to be in a county that still values the paper ballot and understands how to run a transparent election. It was great.
That's
really wonderful.
Awesome. That's awesome, Karen.
So we're here. I guess Vicki called in earlier. And
yes.
We're here with a lot of our volunteers at the Crown Plaza here in Austin. This has kind of become our after the election day action, you know, where we all gather. And so we're hearing from people. It was a slow day here, evidently, at a lot of the polls. Seems like a lot of people voted early, so that today was not, you know, a very, you know, they just went the long lines, at least at quite a few of the polling places. But I'm just thrilled we had nearly 40 people out today at polling sites, out there, you know, ready to take trouble reports from voters. And it just didn't get the quantity of voters to get that many trouble reports, but we did get quite a few. So we're going to be compiling those and releasing that and putting that on our website. So people could go to voterescue.org, I guess, probably in the next 3 days or so and see what we've compiled. And then we're going to pass on what we've collected to national databases that are being put together to compile all the problems that occurred this election. So we'll just feed into that. So that's
wonderful.
Pretty much what's happening.
Wonderful.
So,
wonderful.
Thank you for taking my call. And that's, if anything comes up, we'll certainly let you guys know.
All right. Thank you,
thank
Karen.
Thank you, Debbie and Rand, so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Vince. Thank you for your diligence.
Oh, sure. Well, you're welcome. Thanks, guys.
Okay.
Take care.
You guys take care. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. We're going to go to a break now. Okay. We've got Jim and Eldon. We'll get back to you guys as soon as we finish with this break. We're going to play a little reggae music here, and we'll be right back. We are going to go to 11 p.m. Central Time tonight, so just hang on for a few moments, and we'll be right back.
Thank you.
Law on Rule of Law Radio. We have our own radio station now, Randy.
Yes, it's hard not to say the Rule of Law on the station we're not supposed to.
What do you mean we're not supposed to? We were on We the People Radio Network for a year and a half. They treated us very well. I appreciate them very much. Still, I love Danny and Wes. And we are back on the air now. We ourselves and we, me, myself, and I. Okay, we have, of course, if you'd like to call in, we're going to go for one more hour here, covering the election, covering various topics. We've got Jim on Texas. Jim's going to hold for 1 second. We're going to go back to him. He's got a lot on his mind. We love callers like you, Jim. Right now, we're going to go to Eldon in Ohio, who I believe is also another first-time caller. Eldon.
Yes.
Yes. Are you first-time caller?
Yes.
Well, thank you for calling in. What's on your mind tonight?
My deal is too, but Free or People Radio Network. But anyways, I guess what I'm calling about is a little different, a legal issue. We built a barn 7 years ago, and in 2001, and the typical barn. It was a nice barn. I'm a dad of 11 children, and the kids and I built the barn together. And to store some farm equipment in, and then the up area we made into like a residential area for hospitality, you know, overnight lodging, whatever, for company. Anyways, our county building department came out after the building was started and asked what concerning it because it didn't have permits, because an agricultural building didn't have permits. So they asked what was, you know, they see a building going up, and they just wondered what was going on, and I told them we're building a barn, and they never had any issues with it until we had it all, you know, under roof, shelled in. And then they come and ask us to get permits and inspections because they wanted to call it a commercial building. The same day they come out, anyways, over this period of 7 years, we've been in litigation now for 7 years over a barn. And they've hauled me to jail. I've been in a couple times. This last time, you know, the court has locked up the barn. We had our farm equipment all locked up for 511 days until May this year. They unlocked it for 45 minutes to let my son remove his farm equipment out. And then they locked it right back up. And we've really been, my children, my family, has all been, we've never been in court in our life, never had a legal issue in our life prior to this, you know, building this barn. And now they've made me to look like the monster of Wayne County. I'm a dad, a Christian dad, and I believe in doing everything right and, you know, trying to stay under authority and try to respect my, you know, county officials. But what I'm finding is the county officials have absolutely no respect for what is right. And, you know, from the first day we asked them, would you please just show us the law that requires an agricultural building to get permits?
Have you countersued these guys?
Yes. After the fourth year, I was advised by the Cleveland I should countersue and do the government to stop the malicious actions. And all heat up and got them upset us.
Have you filed criminal charges against them?
I filed criminal affidavits, but the prosecutor, they just threw them in the miscellaneous file.
Did you file against the prosecutor?
No.
An appeal to the Court of Common Pleas?
No.
That's what you need to do. You have standing. In Pennsylvania, you have to have standing.
He's filed. In Ohio.
The prosecutor has authority to make a probable cause determination.
Now, wait a minute. He's in Ohio, Randy.
Oh, you're in Ohio?
Yeah.
I'm in Ohio.
Oh, that's different.
You know, I don't think you need standing in Ohio to file a criminal complaint.
I don't think so.
Do you have grand juries where you are, Elton?
Yes.
Try to get your criminal charges directly to the grand jury.
I tried to do that. I tried to take that to the grand jury. In fact, a neighbor of mine was the chairman of a grand jury. And when I shared with him what was going on and asked him to take it into the grand jury, he got scared and he said he didn't want to upset the prosecutor because he said the prosecutor was telling them exactly what they're supposed to do. And he ended up refusing to even show the grand jury my paperwork.
Who, the foreman?
The chairman.
Yeah.
The foreman of the grand jury,
yeah.
Right.
You need to go to every grand jury they impanel.
And bring if the number is 12, then you bring 12 packets, one for each member.
We've talked before about this issue.
Wow.
So much.
We need to go over this again.
Yes. You really need to go after them, big time. If you start filing criminal charges, you really need to do your homework on what the authority of the county or whoever it is that's coming after you is.
Well, what
if? And if they've stepped across a legal line, you need to go for them. It doesn't matter if you make them angry.
Listen, Elton. It's just total crapola that the prosecutor's telling the grand jury what to do. They brainwash the grand jury constantly, but you know what? The grand jury is a fourth branch of government.
Right.
They can do whatever they want. They are not part of the prosecutorial's office. They're not part of the judicial branch either. They are their own entity. Nobody can tell them what to do.
We have a county that you don't quite understand our county. We have a county prosecutor who is protecting the building official. Our building official...
Come on.
They do that everywhere.
This is everywhere.
They do that everywhere. It's hard to get to the grand jury. It's really tough. Prosecutors always trying to get in the way and intimidate the foreman. All the time.
If you're going to win this fight, you got to get in this fight. They're going to fight you like crazy. One thing, they've got deep pockets. And another, they don't want anyone to dare stand up to them. And if they let someone stand up to them, then they're going to have everybody doing it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why they keep smashing us.
Then you need to smash them. You have a lot more power than they
do. Yeah, and one thing, the main thing you have on your side is that the grand jury really does have that power, and they are constantly under the fear and the threat of that grand jury, because if the prosecutor, these judges, or if any of these people inside the system get indicted by a grand jury, their career is history. They're going to be flipping hamburgers, and they are afraid of those grand jury members, big time.
Have you been through jurisdictionaries materials?
Oh, yeah.
I got a program of jurisdictionary. No, I bought the program. I looked at it some. I'll tell you where I got into it just about a year ago. We've been beat up and smashed so bad that my whole family is so sick of legal proceedings. You know, we contacted different people to tell us to call this person, that person, and I guess I went to some law classes to try to learn some about what to do, and I followed different people's advice. Right now, they have, when I filed suit against the building official because he does not have a bond and oath of office, that upset the court and or the prosecutor, and they hired a private law firm to defend him.
Yeah, I think they have to.
And this private law, you know, this private attorney, law office, counterclaimed my suit and asked the court to find me a vexatious litigator.
Did you read up on what a vexatious litigant is?
Oh, I know what a vexatious litigant is. It's not what I am.
Did you petition for frivolous filing, filed bar grievances against the attorney?
Yes, I did, and that just made him mad.
You bet it made him mad. Filed another one against him.
Well, let me tell you what happened. The court, by summary judgment, found this litigator. We have never, in 7 years of litigation, we have never been afforded one hearing that we request. Never a hearing before the court. Every time the prosecution or the county official requests a hearing, the judge does what they want. They go in there and we have a monkey show.
How many criminal charges did you file against the judge for abuse of process? For abuse of discretion?
Well, we filed none.
Go
I did
for
file
the
affidavit of disqualification against a judge, actually two judges, and they turned it over to another judge, the main judge, and he is not, he will not look at one thing we file. His secretary told us is not going to be responded to.
Did you file criminal charges against that judge?
No.
You need to. When I go into these, I want to crawl up as high as I can get, as fast as I can get. These chumps down at the bottom,
mm-hmm.
I don't want to mess with them. I want to kick the crap out of the ones who try to protect these guys. They're the guys I want to go after.
Well, this is what you got to realize. In our county, they got the guns, they got the handcuffs, and they don't care what.
Yes, they do. I've been doing this 30 years. I'm telling you, yes, they do.
Well,
if you go after them, if you let them push you around and cow you, they will grind you into dirt. The ones you want to go after are not these chumps on the bottom. You want to work your way up to the top. Now, I would like nothing better than to get a shot at the head administrative judge of a district. He wants to do a little song and dance on me, we're going to fight. I'm going to give him a fight.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm looking for. I am out of fight. That's where I'm at tonight.
Okay.
I'm out of fight. I have very well documented what's going on. I met with Zach Space, Congressman Zach Space.
Uh-huh.
Went to Congress. My brother helped him fund his campaign, and after he, you know, got elected, he called my brother and asked my brother what he wanted to do to, you know, help him out as a favor since he helped him in the campaign. And my brother made one simple request. He said, just meet with my brother Eldon and help him straighten out, do an investigation into his barn case to see if we can get that solved. I spent 2 hours with that congressman in his office, my brother and I, sharing and showing him my case. And he told me that it is the worst case of government corruption that he ever seen in his life. And he assured us that he would call the attorney general or write the attorney general and ask for an investigation. But he wanted to check and make sure that there was not any ethical violations to do so. Can you imagine a congressman who is supposed to represent the people concerned about whether there's an ethical violation to report a fraud?
Yeah.
This man come back 2 weeks later, told my brother, tell your brother Eldon, to contact an attorney and ask an attorney to request an investigation. He backed off after he's seen the worst case of government corruption he ever said he's seen in his life. He was a practicing attorney. His wife is a judge in New Philly, Ohio. It's a court in New Philly. Mary Ellen Space is her name. He is an attorney. His wife's a judge for 20 years, and he run with a tail between his legs instead of just asking for an investigation. I didn't tell him to tell him they're fraud. I just asked him to do an investigation. And so I went to an attorney, and I had an attorney write the Attorney General's office and write the Governor of Ohio. And both of them responded back to my attorney saying, if you're having a problem, report it to your sheriff's department or to your local prosecutor's office. They're the ones that can help you through this problem. Well, the problem is my prosecutor. My prosecutor is the problem, my county prosecutor, because he's the one that failed to properly qualify the building official. He failed to meet the qualifications of office, having an oath and a bond.
Okay,
and when I brought up that suit, when I filed a suit for malicious, not malicious, sham legal process is what I sued him for, to so that he would have to, I made the claim that he does not have a bond and oath, so that the court would have to make him cough up his bond and oath. And instead of having a hearing, the judge just ruled by summary judgment in his favor and with prejudice against, you know, so I couldn't bring up nothing against him anymore to stop that. Everything, I'll tell you, I went to Massachusetts.
You know, there's a thing I'm afraid of here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid you've missed points of law and deadlines.
Mm-hmm.
And they will manipulate you into those. That's why you needed to go through the jurisdictionary mm-hmm. twice.
Well, frankly, I am not educated in law.
You don't have to be.
And I've just been through the school of hard knocks for 7 years mm-hmm. now. And what's really going on is everything that happens, okay, everything that goes on, I run to the Supreme Court of Ohio, the Supreme Court backs them up.
You have you have to have all your ducks in a row.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to do now?
I'm looking for somebody. You know, I was recommended to attorney Grossack, David Grossack from Newton, Massachusetts, who was recommended by Freedom Law School. Freedom Law School put him on as one of the top constitutional attorneys. I was looking for an attorney that can try to handle this because we did not have an attorney defend us in this case for the first 5 years, and just being run over and smashed. And so when I went to Attorney David Grossack, now he's from Boston, Massachusetts. I paid him $6,000 to look at this case, just to review this case, and his conclusion was that he told me that this is in the top 10 of the most government-corrupted cases he's seen in his life. We're in the top 10. But his problem is right now is he's been trying in vain to get an Ohio attorney that can file local paperwork for him so that he can come in and assist us. He said he will defend us, but he needs a local attorney to file the paperwork, and I can't find a local attorney in the state of Ohio to work with him.
Hmm.
Everybody I talk to, after I talk to them and they find out what Wayne County's like, they don't want to offend them, they don't want to lose their own jobs, and they back off.
Well, Elton, let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
Ask this person in Massachusetts, this attorney in Massachusetts, if it's possible that you could go as a pro se litigant and you file the paperwork.
No, they've tied my hands. I'm a vexatious litigator. I can't file one bit of paperwork.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
They turned me into vexatious litigator by fraud.
Right.
And so I appealed that to the 9th District Court, and the 9th District Court says I don't have reasonable grounds to appeal. Now, can you believe that? They wouldn't even look at
the
field.
Yeah, I believe that. If you don't get it right, that's the thing.
Mm-hmm. And that's I've been told this, what you just told me. You have to do it right, you know. Yeah. And I tell you, I work day and night full time on this. And I tell you what, I'm so sick of, I will never get it right because they twist it. I'm looking for somebody that can get it right, and I don't care what it costs. I want somebody to defend this case. I don't care what it costs.
Here's what you may want to do, Eldon. Okay, if you go to our website, ruleoflawradio.com, mm-hmm. and click on the forum link and register to be a member of the forum and make a post, because we have a network of people that have been listening to our show for the last year and a half that are on the forum that help each other. You may be able to get some other people in Ohio. We get a lot of callers from Ohio. I think you may be able to network with some of our other listeners that may be able to point you in the right direction.
Send me an email with a brief synopsis of all the things that's went on. I've got someone I'd like to show this to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Let me give you my email address. It's,
okay.
It's PewterMail, PewterMail at email.com.
PewterMail, PewterMail at email.com.
Yes. Send me an email on that. I've got someone I'd like to show it to.
And who's your, what's your name?
My name's Randy Kelton.
Kelton.
And go to our forum, register, and make a post on the forum of the people in Ohio.
Okay. Is any of these people in the Canton, Akron area?
I don't know. I don't know. We've got a lot of people on the forum, but any state barred attorney in the state of Ohio would be able to help.
Yeah, let me do some checking. I've got someone that may have some contacts. Have you looked at taking this to a federal court?
Mr. Gross, that's what I went to Massachusetts for, thinking that he would take it to federal court. And he told me that it doesn't, he don't know if this is something, you know, most of this stuff is, he looked at the paperwork, he said, is just the county prosecutor and the judges, you know, getting very upset during the proceedings, and he said he don't know if the federal court was really the place to take this. He felt like it could be straightened out, you know, with the local court if we just could get a hearing, And I don't know what his goal is there. The bottom line for us is we're wanting use of the building. You know, the county prosecutor has just filed a motion with the court asking the court to give an order to give us a certain amount of time to bring in a compliance with a commercial code or to give an order to raise the building. You know, he would like to raise the building. And our whole deal is we do not use it commercially. And that's why we don't.
Yeah, but how big is this? What would it take to bring it in compliance with commercial code?
It would be ripping the whole thing apart with what they're ordering. You know, it's a brick building. They want all the wall panels removed. They want all the foundations dug out. We'd have to go to an EPA septic system, all the wiring be put in conduit, install fire sprinkler system, install security type system for fire alarm. A fire security alarm system. And the joke is, nobody lives in there. It stores farm equipment. That's the joke.
Are there other buildings similar that store farm equipment?
Not this nice. No, most farmers just have tumble-down pole buildings. But, you know, I've never seen a code or a law that says you cannot over-design a farm building. You know, just because it's nice, just because it's attractive looking, they want to claim it's a commercial building for tax purposes.
Yeah.
And
yeah, that's all it is.
That's all it is. It looks too nice to be a tumble down pole shed. And, you know, and they their prosecutor has had the court find this building a public nuisance.
Okay, we are, okay. This part I understand. We have to look at the details.
Yeah.
You've had to give them some open doors. we want to look at the doors and see if we can't find a way to close them.
Yeah.
Well, the open door started with charging me criminally in 2001. When I seen what they was doing, I pled not guilty and requested a jury trial. So the prosecutor and the court dismissed the case. They dismissed it in 2001. We thought they was done. 2002, never heard a word from them. 2003 comes along, and they come back against me civilly. The joke is, I don't own, my kids own the property. They filed these orders against me, okay? The dad, okay?
Did you challenge the jurisdiction of the court?
Yes, we did, and they just ran over us and said okay, the court has jurisdiction.
No, wait, no, there's something wrong here. There are a lot of things, you know, courts do, but they are not so, even the worst county I've ever been in, are not so completely, totally outrageous that they would subject themselves to the same kind of treatment that would be impossible. This country is not absolutely, totally out of control. There's a lot of things that are out of control, but it's not that bad. Somebody's missing something here.
Well, I tell you what, you ought to read our transcripts of the proceedings.
Then get me a synopsis first.
Okay.
And
I'll get you emailed this.
Yeah, you know, if I sound like I'm getting agitated.
Function.
Yeah, this is the kind of thing that makes me the most crazy. I want to run down there and grab those judges by the throats.
Well, because that won't solve the problem.
Yeah, just write up a synopsis and send an email and also make a post on the forum.
What I'm going to do
also on the forum is I'm going to set up for people to upload files for download. You're talking about other people that want to upload documents for other people to look at. I'll set up on the forum so that people can upload documents for people to read and get feedback and things like this.
Yeah, we may start setting up some web pages too. If these judges have acted this outrageous, let's put it on the internet where everybody sees it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but send that to us. We've got more callers.
Yes, we have some more callers. Thank you. Thank you so much for calling in, Eldon.
And maybe you can contact me after you take a look at it.
Yes,
okay,
I'll do that.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Eldon. Okay, all right. We've got about another half an hour to go. We are going to go to a break now. Here's some Finley Quay for you, and then we're going to get back to our callers. This one goes out to Jerry.
You know you smile, woman. You keep me so down fine. You keep me such an appetite. And I need your loving every night. Your love gets sweeter every day. 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 Baby, when you kiss my lips, make me wanna go head over heels by you, yeah. When you whisper in my ear, what I say is how I feel for you, yeah. Love gets sweeter every day. 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 Seems I was sweet with you, then until the day you were, you're the loving girl that's taking my hand. Love gets sweeter every day. Love gets sweeter every day. Love gets sweeter every day. Now I'm glad I'm older man. See things are right into plan. Baby, if you promise me, we can build our world together.
love gets sweeter every day. Your love gets sweeter every day. Your love gets sweeter every day. Your love gets sweeter every day. Walk so sweetly when you walk, when you talk, spawn the girl. Walk so sweetly when you walk, when you talk, when you dance with me, girl. Boom, 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 boom. Boom, 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 boom.
There it is. Love Gets Sweeter Every Day by Finley Quay. All right, we are going to continue on to our callers. Callers, if you'd like to call in, 512-646-1984. And as you probably have noticed, we don't have ads right now. And that is because we only have one sponsor right now, which is Jurisdictionary. And we will be running Jurisdictionary's ad in our upcoming shows. Right now, I just decided to just go ahead and just play some tunes for y'all tonight for our breaks. But if you would like to be a sponsor of our show, if you have a reasonable product, and let me see, what are the requirements here? It has to have value in use, which means it's not a scam. It actually does something. It's not snake oil. Product has or service has value in use, and we would like it to have marketable value also, which means it's got a reasonable price for what it would be providing. If it's got value in use and preferably marketable value and is not morally offensive to real standards of prudence, you can be a sponsor on the Rule of Law. And you can email us, email me Deborah, D-E-B-O-R-A-H at ruleoflawradio.com to be a sponsor, or you can make donations, which are very desperately needed at this point in time. ruleoflawradio.com. You can see the donations button on the bottom of the screen. If you need to mail in a donation, preferably gold, silver.
We need people sending in suggestions to Deborah that she get my beer button donation.
Oh God. I'm not putting a beer button donation on the website. Sorry, Randy, you're on your own on that one. Okay, but
there goes my beer fund.
At any rate, you could send mail-in donations to the WTPRN, We the People Radio Network, P.O. Box address. That would be the Rule of Law. And any checks, please make payable to either Deborah Stevens, D-E-B-O-R-A-H Stevens with a V, or Randall Kelton.
Randy's Beer Fund.
No, Randy's Beer Fund. We don't have a commercial account, so please don't make any checks made payable to Rule of Law Radio, because we would not be able to cash them or deposit them. Okay, let us move on now to our call. We've got about 25 minutes left of broadcast on election night. We are going to go now to Magnifico. Where? Magnifico, we've got a lot of callers on your mind.
I wanted to talk about a lawsuit and a judgment. There's a gentleman.
And then we're going back to Jim, by the way. Jim in Texas, you're next. So go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. A gentleman by the name of Jordan Maxwell. His real name is Russell. Okay. And the radio circuit is this big guru. And he's talking about his teachers, but he's not talking about how he's ripped off individuals of these credit repair scams and selling them, making a difference and selling them international driver's license. And so he's been convicted and found guilty. And so now that's why, if anyone's wondering why he started talking about UFOs, it's because he's got to go to the highest bidder now, because he has a $450,000-plus judgment against him. And so when you see Alex Jones bring you all these credible people, and Jordan Maxwell and Alex Jones, David Icke and Alex Jones, all I can tell you is, I'm making a documentary, by the way, and so anyone that has the scoop on these individuals and you'd like it to be incorporated into my documentary...
Wait a minute. Are you digging for dirt?
No, I've already got the dirt, sir. I just mentioned
On Alex.
You can go on the internet. You can go on the internet right now and look up Russell Pine, a.k.a. Jordan Maxwell, and you'll find the legal documents.
What was
so
the,
I'm not digging.
No. What was it?
I
missed something. What was the connection to Alex Jones?
The connection to Alex Jones is the fact that he puts these people on his show, and he's a guy that gets to the bottom of the truth, but he's not found out the truth about Joyce Riley.
Oh.
For more proof on Joyce Riley, go to Joyce Riley Exposed at Google Video, and you'll find all the truth you need to know about it. So
okay, look, Magnifico, do you have a legal question?
Yes. The question is, the documentation, the legal documentation, I'm referring people. You were talking about putting information about dirt up on the net. Legal documents. Go look and type the name Russell Pine, a.k.a. Jordan Maxwell, and look at the charges against him. And why isn't Alex Jones, your buddy, telling you about it? But like I said, awakenfree at yahoo.com. A-W-A-K-E-N-F-R-E-E.
Okay. If
there's anyone you want me to get to the bottom of, I'm putting together a documentary.
Okay. If we sound like we're getting a little tense, it's because you come on pretty strong right off the bat.
I got to get the word out because I know you want to shut me down, see? So I got to get it out before you do that. You're interested in good intelligence. That's all I'm doing. I'm looking to tell the truth. Are you against me telling the truth, sir?
No, I just don't trust you yet.
Okay, well, this is Magnifico.
You're really PO'd this guy, apparently. You haven't given me enough to say, well, you know.
Is there
evidence yet, sir? Once again, you haven't even checked out the evidence. Joyce Riley Exposed. Power Failure Hour. You'll see it there. Joyce Riley Exposed. Type in the Google video and then go back and say why Alex Jones is putting his signature on her, why Alex Jones is putting his signature on David Icke, why Alex Jones is putting his signature on Jordan Maxwell, and many others.
Okay,
You're saying all of these guys are criminals?
Sir, I already told you about the lawsuit.
I don't
trust
you. I'm
not asking you to believe me. That's what's wrong. Everyone's looking to be a cult member.
No, you're looking to have a fight.
Okay.
You're not answering questions. You're slinging dirt.
I'm looking to
This is a show about legal reform, legal questions. Okay, there's all kinds of dirt on all kinds of people. All right, and
I got handfuls and handfuls of dirt. I'm not slinging it here.
Okay, sorry, Magnifico. Okay, try to have free speech around here, but it's still our show. So sorry if we offended you. We are going to go back now to Jim in Texas. Jim, thanks for holding on the line. You had a lot of things on your mind earlier that you wanted to comment on, so.
Yeah, here's a legal statement. All the dirt belongs to the native Indians.
I don't want to pick on him too hard. It wasn't that he may not be right. It's just the presentation, you know, to say that because
that's
I didn't...
Being effective. That's not being effective, is it, sir?
Just because
that's
I didn't
I
jump square in his bandwagon on the first syllable, now all of a sudden he wants to tie us in with the rest of them.
That's what people do when they're trolling.
Okay, now listen, let me explain something about the show to our listeners right now. We're after getting to the truth and getting to the bottom of the matter and exposing corruption. We're not just about exposing corruption, exposing all the dirt about just anybody and everybody and all the talk show hosts that are in the community. This is about... this show is about fixing the courts, okay? This show is not necessarily about exposing corruption, but this show is about we want to take our republic back. We want to take our country back. We want to fix the courts, okay? We want to fix the elections. We want to fix the voting, okay? So to me, it's neither here nor there if this, that, or the other talk show host that happens to be on the air in our community or whatever guests they have on may or may not be a fraud, that is not applicable to our show or the topic at hand, whether it be true or not. We're about fixing the court systems.
And I need to make a statement here. Alex Jones is the enemy of all enemies.
Oh, would you shut
he
up?
He is our major competitor. But the man...
something else.
I'm not going to say a word about his credibility. And I was offended that this guy was. Because Alex Jones put somebody on that this guy happened to like, that he wants to crap on Alex Jones. It's not acceptable.
No.
This is not how we got enough enemies.
We're about fixing the courts.
Let's not fight. We fight amongst ourselves is enough already.
Exactly.
I think of the 2,000 Spartans and the 10,000 Persians. You know, if they hadn't have been betrayed by a group of people that was blocking a pass behind them, they would have won. What would those Persians have thought if those 200 Spartans were out there fighting with each other?
Well, and I have to say that if it wasn't for Alex Jones, I wouldn't be in the movement right now.
Yeah. And it's not that I think I have a problem with guys who get out here and propose stuff to get other people to get without that.
Even Randy's not public officials that much. Randy went after good guys. Now, some of these people, and Randy's mainly after just trying to kick their butts and keep them in line. I think after they get to a certain point, some of them do need to be removed. But for the most part, even Randy's not trying to get these corrupt officials indicted. He's just trying. We're trying to fix the system here, people. We're trying to solve the problem. So. Railing on our fellow talk show hosts is not really where we're at. Or any other networks, because we're all in this together.
Especially not on the air.
Especially.
Yeah, and he bushwhacked us. I don't like being bushwhacked.
No.
Anyway, and I don't mean to give him a hard time. I understand he's passionate about what he's doing. It's not a good way to do it. You can't bully me on my own show. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So go ahead, Jim.
Okay, I got something to say here.
Okay.
To that caller that called out here, you don't call Texas and talk bad about Alex Jones or Willie Nelson.
Especially Willie Nelson.
That's right. And Alex Jones, when I first come back to Texas from Canada, I started watching Channel 15 when they had that station going here. And at first, you know, he went up against the courts and the legal establishment and was seen everywhere about town. And at first, I thought, this guy's really something. He's really out of it. But the more and more that I listened to Alex Jones, the more and more this awareness came about on me, this awakening. And it's, you're right, Deborah, Alex Jones is the reason why there are
wait a minute
the way they are.
You can't talk him up on the rival network. Jeez.
No, hey, Rob, we're not rivalry here. We are supposed to be united and bring about some change in the court system.
Yes, absolutely. And here's
to be united. There's no room here for ego and competition, because that's how damn serious it is.
Yeah.
I learned that I'm not, you know, I have a natural birth, but I have a birth that I understand how to, what a standing is, how do I go into a courtroom, and how many masons are in charge of the judicial system. What kind of stuff is, it's not a myth, it's going to be brought into light today, so that the common man can understand his place here in America.
Yeah, and us fighting against one another, we are all on the same team. And frankly, Alex Jones is not competition to us at all.
Oh, no, I know.
Yeah, he's
not
good for us. Alex, he's the one who wakes everybody up.
He's not competing with anybody but the devil.
Exactly.
That's what, that man is, to me, I don't know what they're going to write about him, but it's going to be great. I know that.
Well, it's just that he's on another network, so I'm supposed to tell everybody what a chump he is.
Oh, would you stop
Okay, if I can't tell him what a chump he is, can I make jokes about him?
He
doesn't take my humor very well.
Jim. Okay.
Well, I'm gonna get off of the phone so the other people can call. What nights a week are you on?
Okay, this is the nights a week that we are on. We are resuming our normal schedule, which is going to be Monday, Thursday, and Fridays at 8 p.m. Central. Mondays and Thursdays, we're 8 to 10, and Fridays, 8 to midnight.
Monday, Thursday, and Friday.
Yeah. Yes.
No more on Tuesday.
Well, no. We've never been on Tuesday. This is Tuesday, but we're kicking off tonight our brand new broadcasting, where we were on We the People Radio Network for a year and a half, and then they shut down, and now we have started our own radio broadcast from our website.
All right. And I thank you for doing that.
Yes, and we'd love to have callers like you. Okay,
I feel like I'm part of. I'm not out here by myself. You know, when you get to participate, it gives you some kind of it energizes you.
Yeah, and you should
calling in and learning how to express yourself.
Yeah, and you should go down to Brave New Books.
I'm going. I heard about that bookstore. It's below that bank.
Yes, it is.
Yes. What used to be a bank down there.
Yeah,
the bunker.
On Monday nights, they have a meeting down there every Monday night.
Yeah.
Randy and Deborah, I'll thank you both again for being who you are.
Oh, thank you. And you should try to get on the computer and get to our website and such.
I'm going to buy one. I'm going to get one. I've never had a cell phone until this March.
Now you can't live without one.
Well, listen, Jim, I'll tell you. It's the internet is our key to our freedom and taking back a republic.
I perceive that because public opinion has got a lot of power, and there's people talking. Whereas when that president tried to pass the Patriot Act, we wouldn't be allowed to talk like this without going to jail.
That's how they certainly would want it.
The Patriot Act, the courts, all of the legal, ever since 9/11, every advance we've made legally, civilization-wise, humanitarian-wise, has wiped out. And the final exclamation mark would have been passing of that Patriot Act. We wouldn't be allowed to talk and express ourselves in restaurants, on the TV, on radio, and God knows what else they do to it.
Well, internet is the key.
The internet is the key, and that's why we really have to stand up against restricting and regulating the internet and things like this. Okay, we have to keep the internet neutral, and they want to do things like people who want to stream video or audio like us, they want to charge us extra. They want to charge people who would visit our website extra. You know what they're doing in Canada now? Instead of just providing internet service like you would just get your cable modem or DSL or dial-up or whatever, where you get to just browse the internet and go anywhere you want, they're restricting free speech to the point where they're selling internet service as a subscription package, a certain list of websites, just like you would, like if you subscribe to cable TV or satellite, you have so many channels. Well, that's what they're doing with the internet now. Subscription to so many websites, and if you want to browse the real internet, well, then they charge you for every web page you hit that's not part of your subscription service, okay? That's how they will never be able to shut down the internet, ever. They will, the world is dependent on it, and there's too many hackers. This is what my friend said. This is what's going to save America. Hackers. America is the hackers. We will always have the internet because of the hackers, okay? They will never be able to shut down the internet because of the hackers. And even in China, the government has all these filters so that people can't go to Alex Jones' website or our website or wherever. But you know what? It doesn't matter because we have all the tools of the hackers, and they get to the real internet. They will never shut down the internet. We will always have the internet to help us, because in the past, before we had the internet, who controls the media? The government. You've got the newspapers, you've got the radio, you've got the TV, and whoever controls those media outlets controls everything and everybody. And still, most of the country is controlled by the government propaganda-controlled media, because it's the boob tube. They just sit there, you know, and they just eat whatever is spoon-fed to them. Okay, but you want the truth? It's on the internet. You go to these alternative stations, alternative radio. Okay, so we everything at all costs to preserve the internet.
Yeah. Jim, and, You got her started on that.
Got me started. So you have to get your computer. You have to get your computer now, Jim, and get on your internet.
We have more callers.
We have
need
more.
To go off.
We have more callers now. We've got Dave in California.
Dave in California.
Hello, who is this? Who is this?
Hello?
Hello? Is this Dave in California?
No.
Who is this?
I'm in Canada.
And what's your name?
Who's this call?
You called us.
We hung up the phone.
Video. I'm going to make you radio.
Is your name?
Pardon?
Is your name Dave?
Yeah.
So you're Dave in Canada?
Yeah.
Okay, so what's on your mind tonight, Dave?
Not much, but I really can't sit on the phone right now.
Okay. Thank you. We'll go
on. Thank you for calling. Okay. I think
a minor confusion.
I think there was a minor confusion there. I think we had a child in the house making some phone calls here. He was on the radio. Didn't know it.
I've had a few of those.
Yes, indeed. Okay, so we got more minutes on the air here. Callers, if you'd like to call in, 512-646-1984. All right, let's go back to some election results here. Okay, it looks like Obama is taking the lead big time, according to the so-called official results. So far, we've got him with 338 electoral votes, McCain with 129. So he won. 270 votes are needed to win the presidency. So Obama wins, or Obama was pre-programmed in the machines, however you want to look at it. Okay, so that's the results here for the presidency. And now going back to Texas. All right, we're going to go back to Texas here. And it looks like Travis County website is still acting up, but
they haven't finished manipulating the votes.
They haven't finished manipulating the votes yet. Exactly. They haven't finished manipulating the votes yet. So, but it looked like, from what I could see, there was a problem with reporting on time. Okay. Their website is still not working very well. City of Austin. Okay, what I'm concerned about, Proposition 2. All right, they're still trying to say that Proposition 2 is losing, which is not a good thing for us. We've got our own local error. So it looks like they're going to bail out the domain developers, Randy. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it kind of fits. That's why it took them so long. They had to jostle the votes to get them to be.
They had to jostle the votes, exactly.
If we'd hand counted the votes, the vote would have been in a long time ago.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
What is the problem, Bubba? You got an electronic computer here that can do it at the speed of light.
Right.
They just have to keep manipulating them and moving them around to get the numbers to look the way they want.
Yeah, and as of 10:44 p.m. on the Secretary of State website, we've got Cronin leading 54%, so that doesn't make me very happy. Not too happy with that at all. And it looks like we got Obama as president. And let's check out Travis County cumulative. As of 9:40, they haven't really updated. Raymond Frank is still not doing well, and neither is Don Zimmerman.
And Steve in Ohio.
Okay, so we're going to go back to the call board here, and now we've got Steve in Texas. Hey, Steve, hey. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind tonight?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hey, I was going to say that you and Randy do real good work, and I think it's about time you let some of these listeners know that you guys give a lot and you don't take, you really ask for very little. I bet some people donate to you because, you know, I didn't know that you guys had a donation thing on your site. I went to your website. It's very informative. And I didn't even know I could donate. So I donated one time. And now that you're back on the air, people should help your cause, because whether Obama or McCain gets into office, they need your techniques to survive.
We're not going to stop no matter what.
Another person I would donate to is probably going to be Catherine Albrecht. I'm a little behind schedule there. I have some financial setbacks, but I'm going to tithe on the tithe to her, also to you guys, and probably Alex Jones.
Oh.
But you guys do this enough for very little, and I think you should make it up to let people know that you welcome donations and how they can donate to you.
Well, thank you very much.
You should tell Deborah to set up my beer fund donation.
I'm not setting up a beer fund donation for you, dude. You can do that on your own website.
Okay, that's all I have to say.
Well,
thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve. I really appreciate that. And, yeah, listeners, we do need help. We're founding a new venture here. Don't know how far it's going to go or where it's going to go. We want to get a lot of the hosts back up on the air. Right now, it's just our show, so we're not making any promises, but there are people that want to get back up, that we need to get back up. Michael Bider, Tony Davis, Frederick Graves, many others. And so please donate, because we're looking to expand. We have some basic infrastructure in place, which is the majority of the costs right there. It's not cheap. It's not easy to have all these phone lines set up, to have streaming set up, the audio production, everything. It's not a cheap, easy thing to run high quality here and to do what we do. So we appreciate all your help.
Okay, we have to keep our quality up to at least match the evil rival network.
Gosh, give me a break. Yeah, we really do appreciate, because Randy and I do, we work very hard, and he's right. We try not to ask for much, because we're doing this for the cause. We want to do this for the cause. We want to do this to help people. But, you know, at some point, it's like, man, we got to pay our electric bill too.
lack of funds is why WTPRN went down. And we're going to try to make sure it doesn't happen to this one.
I try and make sure it doesn't happen again. You know, like I said, that's why I was asking for sponsors, because we want your donations. We appreciate your donations. But, you know,
we would much rather have
advertising. So if you have something you want to advertise, let me know. I can produce your ad for you, and I can make you a good deal on that sort of thing. So at any rate, thank you, Steve, for that comment. So, Randy, here's the deal. Here's the election. Looks like Obama's taking it. McCain's taking it on the chin. Looks like Raymond Frank's not going to make it. Looks like Don Zimmerman's not going to make it. Looks like John Cronin is going to keep his seat.
I'm hoping the most powerful individuals have a lot of clout to keep them in, but there are so many. I'm hoping to get a major changeover of incumbents pushed out and new people in their place. That gives us the best hope of getting the Congress out of the control of the president and the powers behind him.
Well, one of the main ways we're going to do that is we have to take back the election, you know, and we made some headway filing some criminal charges against the current Secretary of State for certifying candidates who were not legally certifiable. Okay, then there's all the other issues regarding the voting machines that don't meet standards of law, and I had been working on that, and then I got off track from that by other things like what had been going on at WTPRN and other issues, and running out of time. But this is just one election. There's three elections a year here in Austin, for one thing. Always county commissioners and city council members and all these things. And I don't know why they don't have these people up for election at the regular election time, except for I think they want to have so many elections every year because people get tired of going to vote, and so that way they can, like, sneak people in or whatever. But we've got lots of elections coming up all the time, and filing these documents against these former secretaries of state for violating law. I mean, we've got to take back we have several ways we can take back our republic, take back our country. Take it back in the courts. That's what Randy and I are doing. take it back at the polls. Well, how are we going to take it back at the polls if we don't have a real election, people? We got to have real counting, real voting. So that's why I believe in Vote Rescue, Karen Rennick, Vicky Karp, Bev Harris, everybody doing what they're doing, all the research. So we're going to help them take back the elections, going to court, going to grand juries.
Yes, and it's my belief that if we shake up the legal system at the bottom, at its foundation, that everything over that
and 9/11,
will
of course,
begin to destabilize.
And 9/11, of course, we're going to expose. We're going to take 9/11 in the courts. Okay, we are done with this section of the rule of law, and we will be back Thursday at 8 p.m. This is Deborah Stevens with Randy Kelton on Rule of Law Radio. We're going to be taking 9/11 truth into the courts as well. We'll see y'all 8 p.m. Thursday. I don't know.
Don't be no friend.